a land use sustainability committee meeting where we're having an Art Deco cultural district reimagine workshop. I'm Vice Mayor Mark Samuelin, and we are having this meeting virtually due to the COVID pandemic. I want to first recognize and thank everyone who put this all together, especially Eric Carpenter and members of the city administration who worked so hard and diligently to get us ready for what I think is going to be a very informative discussion. We're talking about the reimagined Art Deco Cultural District, an extremely important topic. And our goal today really is to give feedback broadly to the city administration and also on a few specific issues. So one request I have to our presenters, very helpful to be clear up front, if there's a question or idea that you want feedback on, say that early. And when you get that feedback or head nod one way or the other, it's a good time to maybe accelerate the conversation. So let's say very focused on issues where you want some directional feedback. I want to be clear that today is a workshop. We are not going to take any action. There will be no votes. And as is typical for a workshop, we are not going to have a public hearing with public comment. We have received significant public comment in advance. We look forward to more public comment that will come after. And of course, all of these items and matters will come back to the commission where the public will have ample opportunity to be heard. And we welcome that as always. The way this meeting is set up, and to my colleagues, you've seen that we're going to have six presentations, discussion topics, and then we have three specific times when the commissioners and the mayor will have time to interject. So my ask is that we let our presenters present. They will stay on time, I promise you that. And then we will engage. I'm pretty good at the hands up. I am trying to get us in a good posture, but I definitely don't do as good a job as Mayor Gelber does. So do bear with me on that. In terms of where we are in the process, frankly, our next steps will be what happens in the next few hours. So we'll do a pulse check at the end of this meeting. Perhaps some things are ready to move forward. If we're enjoying this process so much, maybe someone will say we should do this again. But we'll see where we're at, and we'll make that decision as a team. I have two hats today. I'm obviously going to contribute. This is a topic near and dear to my heart. But I'm also your chair, and I'm going to be a little bit of a tough time master because I know we got things to go. So with that, here's what we're going to do. In a second, I'm going to invite Mayor Gelber to give us a couple introductory comments, who will then, we'll hear from Eric Carpenter, who will also give a view from the administration. And then we're going to roll right into our first presentation of Chief Clement. So I think we're good to go, unless anyone has any questions on anything I said so far. I see. Commissioner Minor.
Just following up, Vice Mayor, you mentioned there'll be three opportunities for the commissioners to comment. When are those?
Thank you for that question. After the safety and security presentation at 1:30, we have a half hour for our comments. At 2:40, after the three subsequent presentations, we have another half hour. And then at 3:45 to 4:45, we have a full hour. Plenty of time for us to engage. Good. Any other questions or comments? Okay. With that, Mayor had shown great leadership getting us to this point, and I would ask him to, if he'd like to say a few comments to us.
Yeah, I do. And thank you, Mark, Mr. Chairman, and to all my colleagues, and to Jimmy Morales, our manager, and his staff. Thank you all, and thank you for this workshop. I want to lay this out a little bit because I think it's a pretty important moment for all of us. You know, I've lived in the city for 59 years, and it is, I no question, this particular area we're talking about is the most interesting and beautiful, if not stunning, place in the world. The architecture, the weather, I mean, everything, the green space and the history. And I don't mean the history of when the Weintraub brothers broke my nose in 1977 in front of the Netherlands Hotel in Loomis Park. I mean the history of the folks in World War II, like my dad training on Ocean Drive, and Barbara Kappenman finding the architecture and discovering it and letting and inspiring our community to preserve it. We've, the movies that have been there from Bad Boys to Clam Bake, the parades, the diversity. It's all an amazing place. But it's also gone through so many iterations. When I was young, it was pretty decrepit. There was not a whole lot of activity at all, in fact. And then a few people like Tony Goldman, Craig Robbins, and Chris Blackwell decided they wanted to invest in it. So what we did is we created essentially at that time, because we wanted to get development there, we created accessory uses for hotels, bars, and restaurants, the idea being that they would inspire investment. And in fact, it worked. I lived in a few places in South Beach, including at 820 Ocean Drive, right next to the News Cafe, above a restaurant called OG's in the early 90s. It was that whole area was busy. Restaurants were excellent. There was no hawking. It was a destination for visitors and residents alike. But now 30 years later, it has changed. While the bars and restaurants might have been there to help the hotels, it feels like that's been reversed a little bit, and hotels seem like the accessory uses today. I think we have to come to an agreement that what is known as the entertainment district just isn't working for our city. Maybe it's a victim of its own success, but it has felt like it's just too difficult to manage. Security has become too expensive and more than that, unsafe. Our police are asked to do things that other police forces will do now and again, and they have to do things regularly, which is uncomfortable. Feels a little bit too much like Bourbon Street on the beach and more than the kind of destination where what we want it to be. People come here, too many, to do what they wouldn't do in their own hometowns. And, you know, when I see the promoted party slogans that say, come South Beach, anything goes, let's go wild party, no rules, I wonder, you know, if that's really what our community expects, is if that's the welcome sign we want. But more than anything else, and I think we have to recognize this, it's not really compatible with the art and culture destination that we have become in the last 10 or 20 years. We have made that who we are. That, and you see it everywhere in the city. And I'm just not convinced that the profile of the entertainment district today is that. And we've tried to address it in so many ways. We've had many blue ribbon committees. I've had one since I was mayor. We've added police. We got rid of the noise exemption this year. We went after the promoted parties. We increased penalties for underage drinking. We passed legislation tying a code of conduct to sidewalk cafes to get rid of the hawking and the other things. We tried to police our way out. We've done programming. We've tried to program our way out, but nothing has, I think, fundamentally changed the dynamic. So we have to do something more than we've done. We need to change the essential nature of the district, not cosmetically, but fundamentally. And so the purpose is not to diminish the area, but to celebrate it. And I think we have to come in to this with really a belief that we can do something that works for our city's identity, not necessarily with just sticks, but also more importantly with carrots. As you will see, many of the ideas actually are incentives to try to promote the kind of industries that we think should be there. So what you're going to hear today is really somewhat what I think is really terrific, in a sense that, you know, when I talked to the manager and his staff, you know, Jimmy really challenged his staff to deliver more than a cosmetic change to this area, but to put together a series of ideas that would alter the nature of the district so that it would become the kind of destination that I think we all want it to be. And I want to commend his staff, from Eric to all of the folks that you're going to hear from. The ideas and the approaches are varied, and they address every aspect of the district. Some are small and some are huge, from safety and security to activations to targeting industries, to incentives, to branding, to transportation, to zoning. All of these areas are addressed, and they're addressed deeply. And the purpose is to reestablish this district as what it can be, not what it is right now. There will most certainly be entertainment, but it won't be an anything goes destination. I think that's the way I think of it. So the purpose of this meeting, and I want to try to put this in context, is to start this process and engage it in a very informed way to create a community discussion among the commission and among the community. Today, I don't expect us to decide on any issues. I just thought it important to put these ideas on the table so they can be considered, so you can understand them, and we can begin the process of deciding whether we want to do some or all of them. There's no reason for community input today, because anything we look at is going to go back to this committee or others, back to a commission for at least twice, back to another committee perhaps. So they're all going to get very ample public input. The purpose here is so that you can socialize yourselves and the public can socialize itself to the possibilities of what we're talking about. I hope that nobody has a knee-jerk reaction to anything that's a big change. I think it's important that you all not be timid. I've already been lobbied by many to leave their business alone, to put them into a special category. And I understand that this is people's livelihoods and why they would be so protective. I understand that. But I also know that we're going to be thoughtful and informed. We're not going to do something rash, and we're going to listen to everything. So I would wait for those decisions until we really get a chance to play around with these ideas. But I think at the end of the day, the purpose here is not to be punitive, but to figure out a way where all of the goals of a beautiful place and a special place can be met. And I know we can do it. I have a lot of confidence in the staff, and I have a lot of confidence in my colleagues. So with that, I want to thank Commissioner Samuelin for organizing this. But we need to be decisive once we pick a direction, and we need to let people know that what we want and how we're going to get there, and we'll listen to them and we'll inform our decision making with them. But this is going to be our decisions. This is why people elect us. So good luck, and thank you all for all your attention today.
Thank you, Mayor, for those helpful comments and getting us rolling. Let me now recognize Eric Carpenter from the city administration, who has led this fine effort to get us positioned for today.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman of the Committee, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, Mr. Manager, Mr. Attorney. Appreciate the opportunity to present before you today some thoughtful work that was prepared by your city staff. And to kick it all off, I'd like to ask the communications department, who put together a wonderful video, to get us started with playing that video.
Throughout the years, Miami Beach has represented many brands as the city has evolved through both thriving times and challenges over its 100-plus year history. From the glitz and glamour in the 50s with the debut of iconic hotels, to becoming a destination for retirees and refugees in the 70s, only to again become the place to be with the launch of Miami Vice, an influx of artists, and a newfound appreciation for the pastel hues of its Art Deco architecture. Miami Beach is once again experiencing a change in brand. Each year, thousands of tourists flock to the urban island to view some of the best and most sought-after arts and cultural experiences in the world. Memorial Day weekend and spring break have also brought a continued increased number of visitors to the city yearly. All of this is in conjunction to the changing face of businesses, neighborhoods, sea level rise adaptations, and the current climate that COVID-19 has brought us. Now is the ideal time to take a step back and emerge from the pandemic with a full brand realignment that creates a strong identity and encompasses all areas and messages within Miami Beach. A rebranding that will embolden our presence in the arts and culture arena, create a strong economic development program, and solidify our presence as one of the top destinations in the world.
So I want to thank Tanya and her team for that amazing video to get us started off on the right foot. I want to talk a little bit about the district. Ocean Drive, Collins, and Washington have gone through a number of metamorphosis over the years, revitalization, whatever you want to call it, long history of planning analysis. Miami Beach Art Deco District done in the early 80s, the Miami Beach Art Deco District Time Future Planning Study, the Ocean Drive Planning and Urban Design Strategy, the Shulman Plan for Miami Beach, and the Zaskovich Washington Avenue Vision and Master Plan. We used all of these documents to help inform our process, but we didn't feel like we were shackled to any of them. Ultimately, we based our whole analysis on the fact that Miami Beach is a magic place. Unfortunately, the consensus right now is that some of that magic has dulled. You know, we have information that we've seen that shows that the cost to provide services to the area has exceeded revenue in recent years. You know, calls for code enforcement are extremely high in this district. And over the last 3 years alone, we've passed over 20 municipal ordinances to try and control what everybody feels is a unfortunately, a district that's headed in the wrong direction. The task before us all is to determine how to bring the magic back. On July 29th, the administration was asked to bring to this particular meeting a comprehensive strategy to address concerns in the MSC and CD2 districts. The discussion today will center around ideas and suggestions from a multidisciplinary working group of city staff to help find ways to both address concerns and incentivize change in this new Art Deco cultural district. It's important to note that today is not the finish line, but the starting line for these discussions. No matter what happens today, there'll be needs to have many additional public discussions regarding each policy or incentive. We approved yesterday the contract to enlist the services of a very talented team of consultants to take any feedback from today and build on it. The one item that we know for sure is that the constituents of Miami Beach have entrusted us with over $30 million general obligation fund dollars to help bring about the change that all of us want to see for the district. And in order to accomplish that, we need to take a holistic approach. The discussion today will be broken down into six categories. I think we've touched on safety, security, activation, target industries and incentives, branding, transportation and transit, and zoning amendments. I would be remiss if I didn't say a very heartfelt thank you to all of the very hardworking individuals on this city team that pulled this all together. They're much too numerous to mention right now, but you're going to see many of them today during the course of our discussion. And I just want to say thank you for all of your great effort. And with that, I will hand it over to Chief Clemens to talk to us about the first category, safety and security.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Vice Mayor, Mr. Manager, Mr. Assistant City Manager as well. So my opportunity and my privilege to be able to lead this off with regards to what the police department wants to do and the tasks that we want to undertake as we go into the Art Deco Cultural District. A reimagining aspect, if you will, in the plan. Our plan is kind of based on what we experienced from March 16th on, which was the beginning of COVID, and that is really for the most part focusing on increased visibility. During the time where we were going through COVID and the department was responding to it, we increased our staffing numbers on the street considerably in order to be able to deal with the many nuances associated with the pandemic and what we as a police department were having to encounter and engage with. What we found was that, you know, having the increased staffing helped us out immensely as it pertains to, you know, the challenges associated with policing the city. Because, you know, again, we still have the allure. People still want to come here, you know, even regardless of whether or not there's a pandemic out there or not. And moreover, what you know, our intent was in increasing those numbers, obviously, was to provide people with a safe feeling. So during the summer months, what we did was we really looked at our staffing plans and we looked at our staffing configurations and we tried to be able to go ahead and to, to go ahead and to look at better ways or more effective ways of putting more officers on the street. And, you know, through a series of obviously some, I call them very challenging sessions, we were able to go ahead and do just that. As it pertains to the ABCD in particular. So with that, I'll go into kind of what we accomplished with that particular area as a result of our efforts. Next slide, please. The Miami Beach Police Department staffing plan is comprised of basically a comprehensive review of staffing allocations department-wide. As such, the Art Deco cultural district will benefit from the reallocation of police personnel. So what that meant was we looked at certain departments and we asked ourselves, you know, do we really need to have as many people within that particular section as we need to, or can we reappropriate people out into patrol and increase our presence out there? And we did that. We were also able to look at people that did not count against our minimums and also plug them into the actual effort. So our current staffing allocation for the district prior to this past Monday was 15 officers per day. So just to give you an idea, we have three shifts per day. They're 10-hour shifts with two-hour overlaps. And what we did was we looked at that number and we collectively decided that was not nearly enough in order to be able to deal with the challenges of not just policing Ocean Drive, but policing the beach and Collins Avenue, and then also the east side of the street on Washington Avenue, going from 5th all the way up to 15th Street. We felt the need in order to be able to increase that based on not necessarily anything that was bad that was going on within the area, but the challenges associated with, you know, with people coming back into the city during the summer months, and then, you know, the opportunists that were out there that would take advantage of that and you know, again, obviously look to go ahead and commit crimes against those people. So what we did was, and then again, it's as noted on the screen, beginning Monday, September 14th, we reappropriated people into the staffing plan so that more officers were there and would be available within the ADCD. How did I do that? Well, what we did was we started moving days off. We reappropriated people from their weekends, if you will, you know, we created more flexibility as it pertains to staffing the district. So you can see down on the slide there, it says on weekdays, you know, prior to the 14th, we had an average of 15. And what we did after the 14th was we went up to 25 to 27 officers per day. On weekends, they said that the numbers increased to an average of 35 officers today up per day. But when fully staffed, we're at 40 on Saturday and Sunday. So again, that's a tremendous number when you're starting to deal with putting people in places where they're going to make a difference. But on top of that, we also went ahead and we moved the hours for the ADCD for the afternoon shift. And what we did was instead of having them from a 2 p.m. to 12 a.m. 10-hour shift, we moved those hours to 5 p.m. to 3 a.m. so that between 10 p.m. and let's say 2:30, because we do have to go back to the station at the end of the shift, you know, we could have close to 35 to 40 officers on this. Actually, let me back up. It's 30 to 35 officers that are on the street, depending on the allocation, specifically within the ABCD. And, you know, that helps right now. It's helping right now with the curfew. It's helping right now with other issues that come up during that time frame. You know, whether there be larger crowds, you know, whether, you know, we need to be able to deploy people because of an event that's going on. And we're better able now to go ahead and to really, for the most part, address the challenges, which also include the beach area, because people often sneak out to the beach, you know, through other whether it be through the beach walk or whether they come up from the SOFNA areas and go out on the beach. And, you know, we're now able to designate and an appropriate number of ATV officers out there that can ensure that they know that the beach is close. Next slide, please. So with that, again, we've also gone ahead and with that approach, you know, we now have the bodies in place. We're looking at now layering how we go ahead and we staff that. So for example, I mentioned ATVs in the previous slide. We now have the ability, you know, not only on days and afternoons, but also on midnight shifts, to be able to put officers out there on ATV to monitor the activities, that, if you will, on the beach. Over the years, you know, I've seen some really, really terrible crimes that have occurred there, you know, and, you know, again, what we're trying to obviously do is to minimize that. And I can tell you that with the officers that we had out there and the minimal presence that we had out there, we've been able to do just that, which is really, for the most part, it's a tribute to the men and women of Miami Beach, and, you know, particularly on the midnight shift, you know, where, you know, again, they're out there and they have 7 miles of beachfront that they have to go ahead and to address. But most specifically from South Point all the way up to Lincoln Road in the beach, where most people seem to congregate. So as we go further inward, inland, we have officers that be on mules, which will navigate, for lack of a better term, the Plumas Park area and the seawall area, where, you know, people tend to congregate. Obviously, there's activities out there that we're concerned about as it pertains to narcotics use and obviously drinking and open container violations as well. So we're able to now to address that as well as the activity that goes on to the park. We're reintroducing something that I'm obviously very passionate about, and that's bicycles, the bicycle deployment onto Ocean Drive itself. Back in the early 90s, I was a part of the first bicycle unit that was out on Ocean Drive and was very proud of the work that we did. We had seven officers that were out there, and we were only there from 7 p.m. to 5 a.m., and we didn't have seven-day-a-week coverage, but the days that we were there, we were extremely proactive, and we really took care of what was going on there, and that's going to be what, those bicycle officers are tasked with. Moving further west, Collins Avenue, we will have a uniform presence there that will be in vehicles, mostly traversing, going back up and down Collins Avenue, but also tasked with doing parking walks. The parking walk process or the parking walk philosophy it started, if you will, in January of this year. And obviously things got kind of sidetracked when we hit March with COVID. But, since we've gone ahead and we've started to open up the city in segments due to the easing of the emergency orders, we've now started to re-implement the park and walk details. And our captains are very proactive in doing that, in particular in areas 1 and area 4, which is our south end of our city. It's our way of being able to go back and to connect with the community and to really stress the community policing philosophy. Obviously, we have our challenges. We have a very hesitant and very, again, cautious police force right now that's fully aware of everything that's going around in society, and the trials and tribulations that are happening in cities around the country. But they've also been told, on numerous occasions, and we'll continue to drive home the point that we have a job to do and we need to go out and we need to do it. And that's part of it as well. Now, that's not just going to be on Collins Avenue. And by that, I mean the parking lot details as well. It'll be on Ocean Drive. We're now currently going ahead and deploying our motor units on to the beach and Baywalk areas, in order to be able to address some issues there as well. So we're really looking to go ahead and to do some things that we have not done in recent times and really kind of make it the status quo for as we move forward in the future. So next slide, please. Training. For the most part, we've created a program presentation for each establishment within the Echo Cultural District that serves alcohol. We're anticipating, and by that I mean, our approach to this is that when the city does open up fully, that we're going to be dealing with the same challenges within the ADCD as we did prior to the onset of the pandemic and the restrictions on the area businesses. We have found that there needs to be more of a connection between the police department and the alcohol establishments or the business establishments that serve alcohol. Primarily in order to be able to go ahead and to encourage de-escalation techniques or the teaching of de-escalation techniques from our department, obviously to their business establishments, because of some things that we've seen recently. We've got some situations that have occurred in the past where we believe that security within the venue actually started the confrontation or started a confrontation. That ultimately ended up in becoming a police matter when we received it via a 911 call, or whether we were flagged down, or whether we clearly saw that there was a problem at the establishment and had to, at that point in time, intervene. There's some establishments out there that take this very seriously and have trained their personnel very well, and then there's some that have not done as well as we would like for them to do. But what we'd like to be able to establish is that it become a part of their operational practices and given us the opportunity to get to, obviously, to go ahead and to talk to them about these techniques that we're even teaching our officers now in an effort to try to avoid some of these confrontations. So this de-escalation training for establishments will be specifically for those that employ security staff. And again, it will be offered now. And obviously, in the future, we would hope it would become more a permanent part of their operational components. So next slide, please. Off-duty police officers. As you well know, we've had the TOPS program that has been, for lack of a better term, suspended because we have not had the opportunity to really deploy officers at these establishments. And you know, again, obviously we're still a proponent of doing that. We think that number one, from the standpoint of creating a force multiplier for us on Ocean Drive, we think that it will also go ahead and set the tone for what we wanted to do on the previous slide, which is to establish a training regimen for those businesses that actually employ, or actually are planning on staying open past midnight and going into the early morning hours. One thing that we would like to be able to see with the clubs and dance halls would be requiring them to have a minimum of two off-duty officers when they are obviously open and available for business. Now, that's a minimum. You know, there are some venues that, you know, depending on who the performer is or what's being offered on that particular evening, that may actually require more. You know, we'd like to be able to, once we assign a coordinator to that particular to the venue, that we would be able to get more feedback from that coordinator on just how many officers will be necessary in order to be able to staff it for that particular weekend or for that particular night, depending on what's going on. I think it's critical that we do that. And you know, the rationale behind it is this, you know, that if there is something that happens there, it takes away resources from the street, from patrolling, from responding to calls for services in order to be able to be there to monitor, to make sure that no further incidents occur. If we have an off-duty element that's there, they can deal with whatever issues come up. But probably the most important aspect of that is that they deter the activity before it begins. So, you know, again, we're looking to kind of modify the way that we do that. We're hoping that as we move forward with some of the suggestions, that this is one of the ones that's incorporated into it. And again, I think it gives us a little bit more help, if you will, on the street and moreover, some more leverage on being able to ensure that this gets done correctly. Next slide. Technology. We continue to go ahead and to expand within the Ocean Drive and the Beach Walk and AWOC areas. With camera installation and even more importantly, probably replacing the existing cameras with cameras that obviously are more high tech. You know, most of this is going to be done and obviously under the geobond. And you know, when it's completed and once we get everything in place, we hope to have well over 100 cameras throughout Loomis Park, Ocean Drive, and Collins Avenue, Washington Avenue. The license plate readers, as you well know, are up and running. And we are adding the LPRs throughout various parts of the city to ensure that anyone that comes in here that where there's a problem and they've been identified as being a participant in a crime where the vehicle was utilized, you know, we're getting alerted to. And, you know, again, we've seen the end result of that over the last couple of years of, you know, capturing people who are wanted in connection with homicides, home invasions, armed robberies, and things of that nature. And we've been able to go ahead and to obviously intercept them. And then through the legal process, being able to determine whether or not the person was actually involved in the particular crime. The infrastructure obviously plays a critical role in these plans, and the department is spearheading a subcommittee which brings together the various city departments to use our collective strengths to efficiently reach the common goal of enhancing public safety. You know, the ultimate goal down the road is that we take these cameras and the LPRs and the red light cameras and everything that we have and incorporate them in the futuristic aspect of having a real-time crime center, you know, that we can monitor 24/7. As of right now, we don't have the infrastructure in place within our building in order to be able to do that, but it is something that we have put, you know, on our list of things to do, you know, within the next 2 years and obviously predicated on the movement with the projects that we have currently and we're partnering with within the GEO. Next slide.
Excuse me, Chief.
Yes.
Chief, we're at the 15-minute mark. This is a very important topic. Could you try and bring us to a head in just a couple
more
minutes here? Okay, yeah. And then we'll have time to engage with you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So the last one is lighting and public safety. I can tell you that we had a tremendous partnership with Roy Cooley and his crew. We replaced 114 of the old Acorn light fixtures. We've retrofitted them with LEDs. Again, you see the slide where we've replaced high pressure sodium bolts on streets from Ocean Court from Fifth Street to Espanola Way. Obviously, our next move is to go to Collins Avenue between Fifth Street and Espanola Way. And we think that obviously that will help us out in the crime prevention aspects of that. But overall, you know, the importance of lighting is it's the last couple of sentences. We saw a 7% reduction in Part 1 crimes between 2018 and 2019, given the same time period. And we attribute that a lot of that success in order to adequate lighting. We think that the further adding of lighting into the particular area will aid in that even more so. I think that's my presentation.
Thank Wonderful, you. Chief. Thank you very much for that. Colleagues, we have a good 25, 30 minutes here for feedback, comments, questions. We all know the hand raising. I won't call you out too much, but let me first see which my colleagues would like to be recognized and give any thoughts on what they've heard. Okay, Commissioner Richardson, you win the
leave it off just because I don't want you to be lonely there.
I was about to take it, and I'm going to take it real soon, but you go for it.
Okay, thanks so much. I like the measures that the chief is talking about, the bike deployment, the park and walk, the expansion of the cameras, and the lighting. And so I'm curious how quickly we can do these things. So I'm obviously very pleased about the increase in officers in the district, but that only started, I guess, 3 days ago. So we've got some time that I think we're going to need to come back and look at, you know, what's going on. But do we need to wait? I don't know. Maybe someone can educate me on which tranche the bond money, where the money for the park is, and also for the district, and whether or not, if we don't have that money right now, if there's some way that we could accelerate the monies for some of these items, especially, I think, the infrastructure piece or the cameras and the lighting. So can someone speak to that? I don't know if that's going to be the chief or somebody, Eric or somebody, but.
Commissioner, I can tell you that we have the funding for the majority of the cameras in tranche one of the GEO bond. Let me look real quickly. There might be a few items that are in tranche two.
Eric?
Yes.
Hi, I'm sorry. I was on a call. There's a question about what tranche this is in.
Yeah, we were just wondering if there's any public safety camera money in tranche two or if it's all in tranche one.
It's in tranche one. We're doing some of that camera work right now.
Okay.
And if I may on that, my understanding of it is the fiber optics, the cable have all been run to the existing structures now, the existing fixtures. And we're currently in the process of obviously replacing the older ones with the newer ones.
Yeah, and that job and that project, by the way, is going to be done in just a couple months. It's almost finished.
The project of replacing the cable or the project of replacing the cable and also expanding the new and adding the new cameras?
Both.
Both was the answer, Commissioner.
Both.
I didn't hear.
Oh, it was both.
Yes. Both.
So that's going to be done in a couple of months. And then what about, is there any work that needs to be done on the command center for the monitoring of the cameras? Will that be done in a few months as well?
Commissioner, no, that is obviously something that we have set aside for, and there's a lot of moving parts with the GeoBond projects, and we have to have the space available in order to be able to obviously get what we really want, which is a real-time crime center. But that being said, we're currently in the process of going and looking at other departments' real-time crime centers to include Miami, Miami Gardens, and we have a pretty good blueprint of what we're going to look to do. We have an impromptu one that's not only set up in our training room, but also in our patrol major's conference room, but that's not what I want. That's not the bigger picture one. So right now, it's just a temporary deal.
Right. Commissioner, the Fire Station 1, is in the current tranche, and that includes a new PSCU, new 911 facility. That then relocation of the 911 facility to Fire Station 1 will then free up the current space. And I believe, Chief, that's where you were going to do this sort of command center. So it's all part of the GOB projects.
Yes, sir. And there's really no formal I'm sorry, there's no formal plan right now in terms of that, and we have to put that in writing for the manager, obviously, and then for the commissioners to approve, but right now that's what we're looking at, and that's more obviously in the future.
Yeah, because that's going to be some years off before all that happens. So, but just so I understand, all of the cameras, so the new wiring and the expansion to include up to 100 cameras, is that all that work will be done within about 2 or 3 months, right?
My understanding
is... I'm sorry, Chief. From what I know on the geobond work is going to be done in a few months. I don't know if that includes all the cameras. I also have to say that in the planning stages, we also have Collins and Washington. Mm-hmm. That's also part of tranche one of the geobond. So there's also going to be cameras installed in Washington and Collins.
So but what I'm trying to do is understand the time frame so that here we are September 17th, mm-hmm. October, November, December. So will all of the new cameras and all the new wiring be done by January 1st?
The geobond portion of Loomis Park and the Middle Beach Beach Walk, yes.
So, Chief, is that the 100 cameras you're talking about? I think talking about going from about 40 cameras to 100 cameras, right?
Yes. And that's the total number of cameras that we have that are earmarked specifically for the ADCD.
And all those cameras, are they going to be operable by January 1st of next year?
Well, that's the projection.
That's the plan. And then you've got what I will call a temporary command center to monitor right now, but we'd be looking at a larger command center down the road, right?
In the future, as the manager described, is something that it's once one area is vacated, it opens up the opportunities for us to do that.
Okay. I've got a couple of more chairs. Is it okay if I keep going a few minutes?
Sure. Absolutely, Commissioner.
Okay. So that's on the cameras. And then what about on the lighting? The same question. When can we expect the new lights to be installed? Is that part of tranche one as well? And when can we expect the new lighting to go in?
Commissioner, that lighting is actually not part of our geobond project. That's lighting on Collins, which is a state road. Public Works has engaged with the state and is trying to work through the details of when those lights can be replaced with LED fixtures that would increase the amount of lighting coverage and the quality of the light along the street. We do not have a firm date yet.
Do you have an estimate of what the cost would be for that? Are we talking about a couple of million dollars? Or are we talking about $100,000, if you know?
It would certainly be less than $1 million.
Okay. Experience at the state, then they should be able to do that out of their operating budget. So I will call you separately. So maybe I can help. Given my prior history in the state, maybe I can help to accelerate that a little bit. That will come out of five-year money. Okay, so that's lighting.
Now, they talked about high-pressure sodium light fixtures being changed with LED. So really, for the most part, it's a retrofit. So I think that Eric's assessment is spot on. So it's a retrofit of the existing structures to be able to put more light on the street.
Okay, Eric, I'll call you separately on that so we don't take the time today on that.
Commissioner, if I could, yep. Commissioner, we could also probably use your help on a state issue, because as you know, any lighting we do in the Loomis Park, Ocean Drive area, we have the turtle issue. And mm-hmm. so that has been a challenge in the non-turtle season. We can have the much more sort of security friendly lighting, but then we get slammed by Fish and Wildlife and whatnot, DEP. Sure. And there are some solutions we've put toward them in terms of, you know, shading the nests, relocating nests, just in the Ocean Drive area, just because of all the lighting. So we can use some help with that as well.
I'm happy to help on that. So now one other thing, and I think the mayor may have mentioned it in his opening remarks, that I've heard a handful of times, and we hear from one of our famous constituents talk about the cost exceeding the revenue for the district. And, you know, I've always been very troubled by that. I know there was one analysis that had like 20 million and the latest is 6 million. But when I look at that, and I've really never talked about this before, but this is a really good opportunity to talk about it. It seems to me that no one has ever done a true economic analysis of the revenues generated and also the cost. And I'll tell you why. Those two studies that I've seen talk about the revenues generated within the district and also the cost. But what seems to be missing in that analysis is I, as a resident, for example, I live in Flamingo Park. So my tax dollars don't get counted in any of that analysis. But yet, if I go into the district and have lunch or have a drink, the revenue is there, but my tax dollars should be counted as some part of the economic impact. So I'm just wondering, if have we ever done what I consider to be an economic analysis of the district? And that would include the economic activity that comes into the district, not just that stays in the district. So for example, there are many people that stay in hotels that are on the west side of Washington, or they're north of 15th Street. People that are staying in those hotels may have an occasion to go to a bar or a restaurant in the district. But it seems to me their economic stimulation, because that hotel is outside the district, has never been counted. And I'm just wondering if we've ever done any internal analysis, or if we've ever engaged an economist to really look at the economic analysis of the district.
Commissioner, the challenge with that is, is what's the reason that brought them to the beach, in a sense? I mean, because it's true, if somebody's staying at a hotel outside the MXE, they come into the MXE and they spend money, we capture that. But to count their hotel revenue would then assume that but for the MXE, they wouldn't be here. It's hard to, you know, for example, every year in the surveys, in recent years, the surveys that the Bureau does of visitors, the number one by far attraction of Miami Beach is the beach itself. So, it probably is the number one factor when most people come here. We would have to calculate, and probably it would not be too scientific, allocate to what extent they might not come but for the MXE, as opposed to but for the beach or but for. So that's a tough analysis. So the best we can do is capture where it's spent. Yeah,
it's a very tough analysis, but there are competent people that do just these types of analysis, because the truth is that stretch of beach that is related to, that's just east of the MXE, is probably the most heavily populated portion of the beach, because they view the district as one. And the reason I bring it up is because I've heard these numbers quoted a handful of times, and I've just remained silent, but I'm not buying the analysis, in that I think that there's a lot more going on. You can't just look at the cost of the police within the MXE without looking at the other economic analysis that's just even on the borders of the MXE. And so that's something that, if it's never been done before, we might want to look at, because when these numbers get thrown out, I find them not to be credible as a numbers person. And so I thought I would just say that. With that, I would say, Mr. Chair, I'm very excited to see the results of the new police staffing plan. I applaud you, Chief, for taking this action. I think it's absolutely necessary that we have more police presence. And I know when I ran for office locally last year, I talked about getting the cops out of the cars. And so your park and walk, I think, is spot on. We need more police on the street. We need more people to see our police out of the cars. So thank you. I don't have any other questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your comments, Commissioner Richardson. And just before I recognize Commissioner Minor, I see Amy Mayhew. Is your hand up, I believe? Amy, do you have a quick comment you want to make?
Yeah, just a follow-up to Commissioner Richardson's ask about the economic study for the area. Mm-hmm. What Lambert did for this current model was look at the revenue that came into the area, whether it came in from off the causeway internationally and even locally. It looked at the revenue that did stay in that area, but the revenue, no matter where it came from, built into that space for this study and this analysis. That more in-depth look at if someone is coming to the Fountain Blue but is spending their dollars in MXC, and did they come here strictly for the MXC, and if the MXC wasn't the MXC, would they have come here? That more in-depth study we weren't able to get to for the purposes that we needed it for this purpose of the study of what were we looking at when we were looking at our expenditures and how much was that being generated in this area. Now for the grander conversation of what needs to happen economically in the MXC/CD2, but as part of Lambert's engagement with Siskovich for that study, it was going to look more in depth. However, it was going to be more difficult and there was going to be some caveats, but that professional in-depth look at the surveying of who's coming here and why are they coming here and what you're asking for is part of that second step of looking at the region.
Yeah, if I could follow up, Mr. Chair, just briefly. So let me give you a couple of examples. I live in Flamingo Park. If I had the time, which I don't, and decided to go to the beach every day in the MXC region, I pay significant property taxes. That is a revenue to the city that goes to pay for police presence. And so if I and all my friends wanted to go to the police, to the beach, part of that police protection would be paid for by my tax dollars. But all of that has been ignored in the analysis based on what I have seen. Even people that lived across the street. The other thing that's missing in the analysis is all of the people who work in the MXC and the tax dollars and the taxes that they pay. So I just throw it out to say, because it frustrates me sometimes when I hear these numbers quoted and I don't think they're good numbers. And at some point, I'd like to see a really comprehensive analysis.
Okay. Sorry, Amy. Thank you. I'm going to play timekeeper here a little because I got a couple of my colleagues. That's a technical discussion. I'll weigh in a little bit too. Commissioner Minor is now recognized.
Thank you, Vice Chair. And thank you, Chief, for the presentation. You and I talk regularly. So I was immensely excited and commend you for the increase in police patrol and the sheer numbers that you've been able to increase the police visibility and presence. Police safety is government's, public safety and police presence is government's paramount responsibility. So I'm excited about the changes you've been able to implement. And among the other issues, lighting, cameras. I did have one question. You and I talk a lot about homelessness, and it's an issue that our residents regularly bring up. And I know you've been working hard with your team and the homeless outreach team. And you've made, in certain areas, you've made great strides. But I thought it'd be helpful if you can address some of the measures you've taken, not only to help the homeless gain shelter, but also helping our quality of life for our residents and tourists, and the measures you've taken and what you plan to do also for the Art Deco District.
Our homeless outreach team, sir, and obviously thank you for recognizing that. They're phenomenal. They truly are. They're tasked specifically with going out into every part of the city, any place at all where we hear that either homeless are congregating or there is a homeless issue there, and they're persistent and consistent with their approach towards trying to get people into shelters, get them into programs, or for that matter, get them placed and off the streets. They're also dealing with those quality of life issues. You know dealing with the homeless present to us, and by that I mean some of the issues associated with violations of either state statute or city ordinances. So they've been very good with that. We've utilized the Marchman Act, again, which is a chemical dependency issue, in order to be able to go ahead and to get people, for lack of a better term, mandated help, to get them out of a chemical dependency issue while they're on the streets. They've made themselves available not only during their work week, but also during the weekends or when their time off to be a partner with Mount Sinai. As it pertains to the release of people that have been committed or Baker acted, if you will, to once again, once they get out, they actually go ahead and once again offer their services. So the first goal of that group is humanitarian. They want to get them off the street. They want to get them to some type of shelter. The second one, obviously, is law enforcement. It's a 1A, 1B type of thing. But they have been mobilized. They've been tasked not only with dealing with the homeless, you know, but more recently they've been tasked with dealing with the mask enforcement issues. They have by themselves, and specifically within the MFC and with, or with the ADCD, if you will, they've written close to 800 citations, you know, just collectively amongst themselves. So they've done a phenomenal job, on top of which dealing with the homeless as well.
Okay, thank you. Obviously, it's as you and I have talked about, it's an issue that literally it's 24/7, and if you let up just a little bit, it's becomes a problem. So I appreciate your staying on top of it and working with your team, and thanks for all the changes you're making. I'm actually curious, as Commissioner Richardson said, sort of seeing the data now that we have the increased police presence. I think it's going to have a major significant impact.
Mr. Vice Mayor, can I make just a point to Commissioner
Richardson? Sure, sure, Chief.
The cameras in Loomis Park will be completed within 6 to 8 weeks. We're currently working with Public Works on Washington and Collins and anticipate moving forward with that in the very near future.
Thank you for that, Chief. Commissioner Arriola.
Hi. Yeah, I just want to follow up on something Commissioner Richardson said. I agree with him. I think some of these studies that get thrown around are a bit disingenuous when you're trying to just measure, you know, revenues and expenses in a, you know, very sort of limited way. It's inaccurate, and I think anybody who knows much about business or economics can see through it. Just by way of example, if you look at parks, right? Parks don't generate any revenue. They cost a lot of money to run. But what kind of a community city would we have if we didn't have parks? So when we think about the MXC and we throw around that it's a drain, economic drain on our city, because we're just looking at, you know, what it costs to maybe police and run sanitation services, et cetera, through it versus the revenue, I think we aren't really looking at the whole picture. So I just want us to be disciplined about how we think of what the entire area brings to our community. Clearly, it is a troubled area that needs to be repositioned. That's why we're having this meeting and so many meetings about this. But you know, to say that it simply costs money because of the way we're doing the economic analysis is misleading. And I think we're better served in trying to think about it in a bigger picture. I would argue our hotels citywide and even across the bay in the city of Miami would not be as full as they are if we didn't have, you know, Ocean Drive and, you know, the international reputation that it has had in the past. It is troubled right now. The brand needs to be fixed and repositioned, make no mistake about it, but it is an asset and we just need to work on it.
Thank you for those comments, Commissioner Arriola. Seeing no hands, I guess I get to engage as well. First, I want to thank the chief, his leadership, and our officers. If you had to think of a profession that is getting scrutiny and is getting, you know, really challenged, boy, I couldn't think of another one. And we are very appreciative of our police force. And I would also say we're counting on you. We really, really are. And I'm encouraged by some of what I heard. We've given you a tough hand. This is a complex city. Nightlife in its own, in my opinion, does bring some safety and security challenges. And I think technology is making this more difficult. Let me be specific. Short-term rentals, both legal and unauthorized, bring people to town. Facebook. Sometimes we hear people want to be seen on Facebook doing things that we wouldn't really want them to do. I want to be clear, everyone is welcome in Miami Beach, but we got to make sure that they are playing by the rules. I've seen the data, and it shows that on the more serious crime, parenthesis for the technical folks, the UCR data we send to the FBI, that we're doing okay years over. What I think we're dealing with, though, is what one of my colleagues, or maybe it was Mayor Gelber, said, this perception of anything goes. and more what I would call quality of life issues, noise, scooters, littering, maybe public consumption of alcohol. I don't think we can police our way out of it, and I think we need to address the needs, but I don't think we can do it without elevating our policing game in line with some of the things that we heard. When we have groups forming such as Miami Beach Crime and Prevention, So Be Safe, and I see the word enforcement sort of thrown every day, I think it calls to us that we have to do more and better, like some of the things the chief said. So I want to pick up on some of the things I heard, I liked, and underline a few of my colleagues' comments. I'm excited to hear we're going to have more folks out there. I like the bike. Chief, I didn't know you were one of the first on the bikes out there, but I think that's really important, bike and pedestrian, your walk and ride. And one of the things I'm going to be looking for, because we won't have time to get into all this now, is sort of how much of that is going on. Our community really, really is calling for that. That to me is very, very important. Off-duty. I think that's great. I was a sponsor of TOPS. I like our off-duty program. I know at times staffing those positions can be a challenge. So I want to make sure that when we put a program like that in place, that we have folks there. I completely underline and appreciate the specific details that Commissioner Richardson highlighted. I'm all in on technology. You know, the community agreed to some $70+ million of geo bonds, not just for MBPD. There were other factors, but cameras, LPRs, lighting. And I want to see how quickly we can be using that technology. I understand we may not get all the way to a full crime center, but you know, one of the things that hits me is, you know, we've got a certain area, it's not hundreds of cameras. What does it take to get them, you know, real-time monitoring of someone really focused on that? And Chief, I don't need a response right now. I know it's on the agenda, but you know, how do we jumpstart that? Because it's sort of a contained area. I know we're talking about the police side of it. I would just say that I also think we need to raise the bar for our businesses. The fact that we still have some of the hawking and bait and switch adds to this environment where people think anything goes. I don't know. I think operating on our sidewalks is a privilege, not a right. I don't think everyone is doing what they need to do on that front. And I think we need to elevate our game. I think the bottom line of all of that, and I think this is in line with Commissioner Minor's comment about data, Commissioner Richardson's comment about plan, we'd love to see how this all comes together and how it rolls out and when we can start to sort of check the box and see some of these things in place. And we're supportive of you and your team knowing it's a hard hand. I can't resist the opportunity to comment because my chief finance colleagues weighed in on revenue and cost. Now, I will not drag us down that rabbit hole because we could go for a while and we're almost up to the time here. What I would say is just by way of background, a few years ago, the city did an internal effort and basically tried a very complex task of trying to figure out how much revenue comes in from this area and how much cost do we have? And I think the hypothesis at the time was this area was requiring a lot of resources and that the police actually had its own district for this and that code and sanitation was putting a lot of time. That was the hypothesis of that work. And that study came out and said, hey, you know, we're in the red some $27 million. A lot of issues and questions came up. And when the mayor appointed his blue ribbon panel, which Commissioner Areola and I served on, this topic came up again. So we said, well, is it $27 million? How could that be? We know a lot of money is being made in this area. We can't be down $27 million. So we specifically, as a commission, as a body, asked the city to go at it again. Bring in outside help. Do your best. It's a complex problem. As the manager said, it's hard to know. Is the folks there at the Fontainebleau, are they there because of Ocean Drive and Collins? maybe at some point, if it's good news, they're there for that. Frankly, if there's bad news, they may not be there for that. That's a very difficult equation. But the city did, I believe, a professional, reputable next step using an outside agency, Lambert. And what they showed is that we're down several million dollars. I think it's six or seven. So what I would say, my own view, I'm a little more supportive of the view, this topic is taking a lot of energy. Look what we're up to today. Look at how much time we as a body and the administration focus on it. And I don't know if the number is 27-7 or somewhere else, but the argument that this area is contributing to our economy, that has not played out in terms of these initial analyses. Is it a contributor? Absolutely. Does it do good for us? Absolutely. But do we put a ton back in? That seems to be what the analysis is saying. So those are my comments. I'm very excited about where we're going. We cannot police our way out of it, but we cannot do it without raising our game. Mayor, I see you're back and your hand is up. So you're going to help us wrap this section up, please.
Yeah. Listen, I think this, you know, a lot of these issues, especially in security and what it generates, and it's easy to do a cost-benefit analysis and say, well, how much do we spend and how much do we earn? But I think really the ultimate question is whether this is what we want. It's not just the feeling that there's at times it's out of control or anything goes, or how much money we're getting from it. It's that I think that our community has changed, frankly, in the last 20 years. We've become something different, and this thing has also grown, but it's grown into something that we need to try to get our arms around. And so I, while I appreciate the financial analysis, I think at the end of the day, first question we have to ask ourselves is, are we happy with this district right now? Whatever that we make from it or whatever we spend on it, is this what we want it to be? And I don't believe that a commissioner could say that this is what we want it to be. So we've got to figure out how to reform the business model, keep business, but not this model, because that's really what's going on.
Thank you for those comments, Mayor. So we have concluded the commission discussion on safety and security, at least for today. I know we've not concluded it. Heather Shards now recognized 15 minutes, Heather, to tell us about activation, please. Heather? Is Heather with us?
She is, Mr. Chair. Just maybe give her 1 second to get herself unmuted. Okay. There she is.
Okay, great. Heather, you're up.
Thank you very much, Vice Mayor. I'm going to share my screen. And is it sharing? Oh, okay. There it is. Great. Good afternoon, Mayor, Vice Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you for allowing me to introduce our short-term activation plan for the Art Deco Cultural District in 2021 and beyond. Before I start, I want to show you a very, very brief video of what we were able to accomplish last year.
I'm not seeing the video.
You know, Heather, your PowerPoint is up, but the video is not.
Oh, it isn't? Oh, goodness. Okay. Let's see how I cannot. Well, there we go.
Sometimes you have to unshare and then share back on the video.
Okay. Let me see. I'm sharing which one? Okay. Well,
so just move, like if you could just move that screen over. Sort of left screen, it should work.
Switch again. And then you'll have to, you'll share that one.
Great. It's not sharing that one. I love technology, right? Okay, let's see. It doesn't move.
Excuse me, Heather, do you want us to try and jump to Amy's presentation?
Why don't you do that? I apologize.
No apologies. We're in a Zoom world. We know how that is. We're in a Zoom world. We're all doing our best. We're with you here. Amy, okay. Are you up and ready? And we're also going to hear from Tanya, so I'm going to take who's ever ready here in a second. Amy?
Hey, hi, right here.
You ready? Good. We've got you for 10 minutes here, so you want to kick us off?
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, I have no slideshow, so it's just me.
Okay.
Good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, everybody, again. So we're talking about reimagining the area and looking at a different approach to the corridor. It's really important how we look at economic development as part of the process of supporting the businesses that are there in retention and then part of our attraction efforts as well. And so part of when we look at what we're wanting to be, I like to first identify who we are, what we look like now. And in Ocean Drive, Washington, and Collins area in that South Beach MXC CD2 districts, we have predominantly hotels, lodging, dining, entertainment establishments with a sprinkling of retail and some other commercial type establishments like our single use, our little mom and pop liquor stores that are out there. We have a pretty high vacancy rate and we're looking at how do we fill in the gaps to really accommodate what the new vision is. And how do we attract and retain, how do we help the businesses that are there to do what we need them to do to be what we want the new vision, to support the new vision? And how do we fill in the gaps with what we want? And that's through our attraction efforts. So when we look at our retention, we're looking at really supporting our businesses and identifying what are their operational behaviors, both the goods and the bads, and then figuring out for the ones that don't work, why is it not working, and providing the resources and tools to really get them where they need to be. For the ones that really are working, really finding ways to incentivize and reward that behavior and the operational standards that we're hoping everyone else can match up to. Then we're also looking at supporting, doing outreach and advocacy, really proactively being out there, working with the businesses so that they know who we are, we know who they are, and they know who to come to when they need help, so they're not going so far down the rabbit hole of needing assistance that perhaps their operational behaviors are reminiscent of the things that we don't really like to see, like the hawking and the solicitations and some of the things that are creating the ambiance that we know is allowing for the environment that we're trying to discourage. And then really supporting the South Beach Business Improvement District, getting that going. And when we talked about how could we really help get it going, we talked about what might be the apprehension right now. And we were so close to getting that vote before COVID came along, and then we lost all traction. And now the apprehension comes from they're economically at a loss right now with everything going on with COVID. And how can we really show them that we're in this with them? And having that bid set up along with Washington's bid really helps define that district and supports all the other initiatives that we're really looking to do. And we talked about setting up some type of funding mechanism that could help push the other projects and things that we have identified as administration. And when we looked at how we could set up that pot of money, we thought of two options, a TIF style concept where we would lock up the city of Miami, the Miami Beaches portion of the tax revenue that's generated from the properties in that area to help fund these other initiatives, or through some type of resort tax lock of the resort tax that are generated in that area, and creating a pot of money that way so that we could use to fund a lot of the other initiatives when it came to enhanced policing or enhanced sanitation efforts, marketing, banners, things of that nature. And then, so that's our retention. So section. Sorry, I'm trying to go through the time, make sure I'm good on time. And our business attraction is really where we fill in those gaps of who do we want it to be and what do we want it to look like. And when we look at the market and look at what people are doing when they're coming down here and matching it up to the ambiance that we're trying to build, we were really thinking about experiential type services. So things that we're seeing coming along through the markets of your painting with the twist type things, your augmented retail spaces. We have spaces coming up in our pop-up spaces, like we're with the new pop-up that we have coming in to on Lincoln Road soon, with cars that are going to be there where you can interact with the vehicles and actually get to know the brands and walk away with an experience about that brand and wanting to come back and really re-engage with the ambiance and the environment that we're building for more of this art deco, arts and culture environment. And experiential dining, things where you're interacting not just with your food and the people that you're with, it's interacting with the with your whole establishment and really creating a place for people to want to come to, not only regionally, but internationally and across the country, really coming into setting a tone for we're coming to this area for XYZ reason and really generating that extra revenue for the whole area of Miami Beach, not just that section and portion, as you talked, as some of you talked about in previously when looking at our cost and benefit analysis. And we are also looking at how do we really support these businesses, not only through the through creating the environment so it naturally just gets them attracted to the space. We're looking at how can we proactively attract them and looking at financial monetary incentives, such as rebates on business tax receipts, fee abatements, cash grants, commercial lease subsidies, business relocation loans, and cultural heritage business programs, all of which are detailed in the memo. But because they do have some financial impacts, I probably don't want to go too much into them. But really looking at some of the non-budget impact incentive programs that we could do with expedited licensing and permitting processes, which we're already going through faster, but we could really come up with some more defined processes that help speed that up for people who are coming to this area and are performing to a business, have a business model that we're trying to incentivize. Technical assistance, providing them with the tools to really get up and going, getting the city-sponsored marketing program, really pushing our own resources to help support their local efforts so they're not having to put so much of their dollars into that. And then really what else we could be doing is providing sponsorship and referendum and targeted FAR increases. Our planning department really goes into a lot of their land use incentive programs, and a lot of the things that we're getting feedback from stakeholders is there's a lot of things that they really like to see that they could be doing, but there's just some land use prohibitions there. And if we can provide some of those as incentives to really get that development going, it'll change the environment, which helps support the business models that we're trying to bring in, which helps support the change in atmosphere that we're really trying to drive. So it all goes full circle. Okay. So I hope I was good on time.
No, you did great, Amy. That was you're right on there. So thank you for that. We're going to hear a couple presentations, and then we'll have some discussion and feedback and questions around that. Heather, if you're ready, we're going to do that. Or Tanya, we could jump to branding. Heather, are you good to go, or should we go to Tanya next?
I can try one more time, and if
yeah,
not,
sure. Tanya.
Heather, don't worry. PJ's got it. He's going to put it up to you.
Okay.
Thank you. So I'm going to try to share my screen again. And hopefully it will work this time. And there you go. Great. I want to again thank you for your patience in with me with the presentation. The reason why I wanted to show the first slide of the video is to really show you that what we were able to do in 2019, and for 2020 and 2021, we really want to focus on having a short-term plan, but also focusing on a long-term strategy. We think that there are so many things, we are doing so many events, we have so much to offer that we really need to have a substantive plan to move forward. First and foremost, COVID-19 has and will most likely continue to limit the types of programming that we'll have in 2021. Regarding the schedule and the types of activations that we have for 2021, I want you to note that all of these events are wholly contingent on whether it's safe to do, whether it's healthy to do, and prudent to launch or maintain this programming. Accordingly, the timelines that you're going to see in this presentation may change based on a number of factors as we continue to try to put safety first. However, I really think that this is an auspicious time to produce and sponsor more events.
Need to slide that one to that side.
Okay. Are you not seeing it? Oh, goodness. My team is very, very supportive and trying to help me with this. But what I was saying is that this is a very auspicious time to produce and sponsor really safe programming that will give high return on investment, elevate our reputation, drive our business development, and raise quality programming and drive cultural tourism wherever we want as we recover from COVID-19. This is so boring. Okay. Tanya, it's not advancing.
Which one do you have there? Is it the run slide? It's on the bottom right-hand side of the screen. Runs, there you go. And that should do it.
Really? Okay. It's not showing the slide. I can keep going. I don't need my slides. I can actually tell you. We believe that having a short-term plan, which is about 12 months for the fiscal year from October 1st, 2020 to September 2021, that we need to have an art and culture strategy that can contribute to the transformation of the Art Deco Cultural District. The short-term plan would include citywide activations and episodic and community engagements. That's why in the video, we divided up amongst what we are doing with our cultural anchors, what we're doing in terms of our community engagements, and then celebrations, which are our special events. We believe that the purpose of doing that is that we can embed in the minds of our residents and our visitors and guests that art and culture are part of the history, the ethos, and the fabric of Miami Beach. And we do that by setting out certain pillars. And the pillars that we are focusing on for long-term are how we can support our current cultural organizations and community, how we can create and enhance venues for artistic and cultural engagements, how do we leverage our public art collection, how do we support quality special events with clear return on investment and that attract regional, national, and international audiences. So how do we support our artists and creative professionals so they can enhance that reputation of Miami Beach? And how do we enhance the vitality of Miami Beach's creative economy, strengthen our culture in Miami Beach's neighborhoods and communities, and encourage civic dialogue, awareness, and participation? We are a city that has world-class art museums, extensive private collections, an evolving gallery scene. Miami Beach offers a wealth of opportunity to view the finest modern and contemporary art in this region, even in the nation, honestly. The good news is that we already understand that it's very important and that we have a wonderful collection and that we're investing and producing an impressive variety of art experiences. There's a lot more that art and culture can do for Miami Beach. However, the question becomes, how does this investment really help address the immediate issues around the Art Deco Cultural District? How does it help address the declining trends that we're viewing and bend them toward growing a city that can attract a younger knowledge and imagination-based workers and businesses led by creative entrepreneurs? The immediate challenge is trying to really upscale the district that is right now a little dodgy and doesn't really reflect the character and the architectural heritage, art identity, vision, and contemporary sophistication that we desire for that district. While planning for a long-term solution, we need to look at some of the trends. And some of the trends that we have found is that for Miami Beach, we have an aging population, we have a shrinking population, and we also have an increasing cost of living. So what's happening is the creative population is moving across the bridge. I have a really great slide, and I'm sure that you all are gonna get the hard copy, but it's a great slide that shows the hotspots for culture and art. And that is really on the other side of the bay. We have a concentration that's really below 23rd Street to 5th Street, but it is decreasing and we have to really address that. Because of that, we think that we should, for art and culture and our engagements and activations, that we should focus on that area, the 5th Street to 23rd Street as part of the Art Deco Cultural District, because there's connectivity between all of the cultural anchors, programming, the bids, the associations, all in that area. So when residents want to come to that district and visitors want to come to that district, they have different points of connectivity for the area. The way that we frame our plan and the long-term strategy is thinking how we can be innovative, socially cohesive, and think of how we can make our community healthy and have wellness as part of that. We do that by really digging even deeper and thinking, how do we innovate, how do we integrate, and how do we incubate? We innovate by continuing to do activations that utilize our signature festivals and events, and they supplement them with the unexpected, the surprising, the multi-generational, the multi-ethnic events, and expand on our food culture and cuisine for the district. And we start taking art, the art of food, seriously. We're doing that this year by having citywide events. So for 2021, our citywide events that really do that are continuing Culture Crawl. So and again, this is all going to be contingent on whether, you know, COVID allows us to do that or we can do this in a safe manner. But we want to start Culture Crawl from starting in October to May. We also want to start the Soundscape Cinema Series October to May. And we're going to start doing tours of art in public places October to May. And then we're going to reintroduce the artisanal and produce market in Loomis Park, hopefully starting in November with a new plan with a new look and feel. We're also going to still do events that we have been doing annually, like Veterans Day, Opera in the Park. And then we're going to do Art Week Miami Beach, have New Year's Eve, and then Spring Break, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Hall of Fame. We have a number of events that we're going to be doing that are going to be citywide. Now, specifically for the Art Deco Cultural District, we have, you know, Art Deco Weekend is going to be coming. These are events that we sponsor. The Sobey Wine and Food, Miami Beach Pride, Art and the Air and Sea Show, and the South Beach Seafood Festival. And the community front, we've been, as you've seen from last year, we're going to do wellness programs. We've been doing HIIT exercises, as well as integrating yoga and meditation, and still doing those small community activations like the Buena Vista Social Club that we did, or the Puppy Brunch, or doing the Motown Review, having those small, intimate community activations that actually tell people about our culture and our character and what's in our soul and our pulse. On the integrating posture for our events is collaborating to optimize the impact and of our cultural anchors. This is a way that we can create systematic, interconnected, holistic programs that really advance the cultural anchors that we have on Miami Beach. So, of course, we know that we have the 15 cultural anchors that are slowly reopening, but they have been continuing to produce acclaimed quality virtual content. For the 2021 calendar, they're going to be including even more original and welcoming programming that include music, exhibitions. The Bass Museum opened yesterday. We have dance and horticulture with the botanical gardens opening, and film and history and literature. We're going to have 36 presenting organizations are going to be doing for 2021, 323 performances. So we're going to have a variety of activations that will be in the district as well as beyond the district. And then the incubation portion of how we want to strategize our plan is where we develop private and public partnerships to create economic opportunity that encourage a creative economy business to develop a local arts district. So that is really us working with the BIDS, working with ODA, working with Espanola Way and New World Symphony to make really robust activations. And that will also include the artisanal market that I just mentioned is going to be reopening. An example that we looked at when we were doing the research for this is, I know we can look at Wynwood and there are a number of examples in our neighborhood, but we also looked in San Francisco. And then San Francisco, the reason why I looked at the Do-Re-Mi district in San Francisco is because very similar to us, they have an area that they had vacant storefronts. It was a little dodgy as well, and they needed to attract an economy. So, but the difference with them is that they were able to do a strategy and implement it and execute it and have positive return within 3 years. And that is something that I think that we could potentially do for this district, have a strategy, a 3 to 5 year strategy that could really make a difference.
Excuse me, Heather, mm-hmm. Would you please wrap us up here?
Sure, will do. Some of the other things that I wanted to discuss were Instagrammable moments. And again, I will share this deck with everyone so you can see the visuals, but we have a number of opportunities to do some permanent work and temporary art installations. In the Geo Bond for Loomis Park, we have $75,000 and there's a $100,000 rollover from the county to fund a bond project in Loomis Park. So we can utilize that to do a permanent work in Loomis Park as well as temporary art. And then lastly, I want to bring up Art Week Miami Beach, which is this December. If we're able to do that, we're going to have a number of small activations, but the three larger ones are Art Outside, which has just been launched, and it's a walking tour of all of our public art. And then we'll also have Seven Deadly Sins, which is going to be on Lincoln Road. It's an innovative project on Lincoln Road where seven vacant storefronts will be transformed to premiere 10 to 15 minute plays, and the restaurants and stores can also participate. And then we have Crystalline, which is gonna be our public installation in Soundscape Park. It's an evening installation that will be beautiful and it's interactive. And then the third is having an extension of Culture Crawl for having it multiple days over that week. So I thank you for the time, and I apologize again for the technical difficulties, but I do want to leave you with a question that Vice Mayor Samuelin asked us to do. And the question is, do we want to stimulate the private and public investment to attract a creative economy back to Miami Beach? And if so, are we willing to really dig deep and invest in doing something that's not just 1 year after 1 year after 1 year, but to actually sit down, strategize on who do we want to attract, why do we want to attract them, and how we're going to attract them. And that's a long-term plan. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Heather. So next up is Tanya Daniels. She's got 15 minutes to give us a branding presentation, and then colleagues will bring it back to the virtual dais, and we'll have plenty of time for questions and comments on the three. Tanya, please.
Sure. Okay. Are you seeing PJ and my setup correctly?
Yes, looks good.
All right. So rebranding Miami Beach. So let's talk a little bit why cities rebrand. So there's a lot of different reasons why a city would want to rebrand, but here's just a few that had come to mind in discussions that we've had recently. You want to differentiate yourself from somewhere else. You need to revive an existing image that is outdated. You want to, you know, re-examine a pre-existing negative idea of an area that has maybe grown, or highlight some significant positive changes that are happening to an area or areas or the city as a whole, which is obviously something that we're talking about here today. So why are we doing this now? Why are we thinking about something like this now? Obviously, with the Art Deco Cultural District and everything that we're looking at, but we're also looking at a lot of other things that are happening right now. COVID-19 pandemic has caused kind of a worldwide pause, an opportunity for everybody to take a step back and really look at what's going on. Tourism, with everything that's going on with COVID, worldwide changes in tourism and what people are expecting when they come and visit another city or travel at all. As I said, the MXC, the Art Deco Cultural District, we all know that in North Beach, there's a lot of, you know, new developments, the North Beach Master Plan. We have increase in arts and culture. Everything that you've heard about in the presentations today is kind of driving conversations about Miami Beach and its brand and what is the brand and how do we move forward with that. So that's a good question. What is our brand? So our brand identity currently has been built and rebuilt by public perception over many years. I don't think that there's any argument here that Miami Beach has never had its own brand that it has created, that we have promoted, that we have lived and breathed. But, you know, there are certain things that people think of right now when they think of Miami Beach, obviously our beaches. We're beginning to be known as a bit of an anything goes party atmosphere. Some would argue that is different, whether you're talking locally or nationally, as to how people are perceiving that. But we're also a prime event destination. Everything that Heather just said in her presentation, really, there's a lot of stuff that goes on here. And as you can see, all of these things can bring, you know, some negative press and or, you know, we can also look at some positive press. We have a lot of things that are evolving in our city right now. We really need to take a step back and refresh and coordinate our brand with all of these great things that are starting to emerge and cultivate and decide, you know, really what we want to be perceived at for decades to come. So who's doing our messaging right now and what is our brand messages that are being put out there? So for tourism, there's a lot of different messages that are being put out there. We're lucky that we have so many people that are promoting the city and promoting the different things to do here. There's the GMCBB, obviously, with its overall message for all of Miami as a whole, found in Miami and Miami Shines. Our VCA puts out messaging. You know, for instance, during Zika, they had their worry-free campaign to try to get people to come here. We have Lincoln Road, Espanola Way, Ocean Drive. All of these great places are putting out messaging. The problem is it's all different messaging, and there's not one cohesive tourism message for Miami Beach. There's a Miami message that the GMCBB puts out, absolutely, but there's not been a Miami Beach brand message that has been consistently put out. So in addition to all of that, there's also all of the messaging that our department does, the municipal messaging. Plus we have, you know, high impact weekend messaging that we put out, all of the arts and culture and the event stuff that, you know, Heather really talked about. We have short-term rentals, municipal issues that we deal with, our police department and a campaign we just started for them, U plus me equals MBPD. Plus we have a lot of environmental things that are going on. So long story short, there's really a lot of different messages that are being shared and put out. But again, not one cohesive message for Miami Beach as a brand. So what do we do? How do we move forward from there? Instead of having multiple campaigns, we think that there's a possibility of looking at kind of coordinating all of these messages under one top level umbrella, creating a brand that really has a deep understanding of the city's goals, of who we are, and of what we want to promote. Everything from governance to tourism, economic development, sustainability, one overarching brand that really says who we are, what we have to offer, and what people are going to get when they come here. Something that would include, you know, a citywide tagline and a unique positioning statement that provides a platform that all of our partners can truly stand on proudly with us. So what is that task? As I just said, a citywide regeneration, coming up with a refresh brand image to really make sure that we endure things like COVID-19 and the changes in our brand as we go through. something with a solid foundation of all of the amazing attributes that Miami Beach has to offer. I do want to stress, though, that that has to be done as a greater process. A brand is not just a tagline, it's not a pretty picture, and it's not a promotional video. Whatever you're offering and whatever you're saying your brand is has to truly be what the person gets when they come to the city. And I think that that's what we're all talking about here today. So the ultimate goal, the ultimate task is to increase our pride amongst our residents, attract more tourists, drive commerce, and increase economic growth. So how do we think that we should do this? We think that creating a marketing task force is really a smart step in moving forward with this. We don't think that this should be just a government city initiative. We really think that we need to embrace this with all of our partners, all of these people that are helping us do the messaging so that everybody is truly part of the fabric, part of this message going forward. People from our arts and culture community, our tourism and hospitality, the entertainment, the events that come here, our real estate and commercial and business, plus all of the city representatives from the various departments that are really, you know, integral into making this a success. And what is that task force goals? Create the procurement tools to make this happen, evaluate the bidders, and help us choose the agency that's going to move us forward and help us with this process. What would the agency objectives be? So a full brand analysis, not just coming up with that pretty picture and the video that I was saying. They really need to do some perception research. What do people think of Miami Beach right now? What do people think of when you say Miami Beach to them? Do they need to perform a competitive analysis of other cities around the area? Look at focus groups. And also evaluate the current brand and the messages that are out there now. Are they helping or hurting our messaging going forward? And then take that and really create that brand with us based on everything that we're saying. So, you know, some examples here, FedEx is, you know, synonymous with overnight delivery, but that wasn't because they just had a marketing campaign that said we're overnight. They truly deliver on overnight delivery. Tesla, electric cars, you're getting what they say that they're delivering. And obviously Apple with electronics. But also looking at all of our sub-brands and making sure that whatever this brand is that we come up with, whoever we want to be as Miami Beach and portray ourselves as going forward, making sure that everything falls in line with that. So once all of that is finished, we would ask them to really come up with that verbal and visual identity to push and move Miami Beach forward, to create the taglines, the tone, the key messages to all the target groups and how to message them, the visual identity as well, the logos, the color palette, our social media messaging, how we represent ourselves in social media, how we can work with our partners and create packages that they can also utilize in their businesses, in their hotels, and their messaging that really complements and works with the message that is created for the brand of Miami Beach. So in coming up with all of this, this wasn't done in a vacuum. I really listened a lot. I've attended a couple of the Chamber of Commerce meetings that they've had recently about branding. I've talked with some representatives in the area, but I also wanted to reach out to an agency that I have high respect for, who is Ogilvy. If you have any knowledge of branding agencies or ad agencies, you know Ogilvy is one of the top in the world. And I was lucky to get somebody in their Miami office that was very generous with his time. And we talked a lot about different things. And I asked him, you know, when you're doing this, do you think that it should be one overall umbrella, or should Miami Beach have a bunch of different brands? And he talked through some things that they have done before. He mentioned some things that they did with Mexico. And one question that they ask is, are all brands working towards the same goal? Are the hotel brands working towards the same goal? The city working towards the same goal? And one could argue that we are. So he recommended everything that I said in the presentation, a full brand analysis, the negatives and the positives to how we want to portray ourselves. So he said, you know, if you're going to portray yourselves as a family-friendly city, make sure that when people come here, they're getting family-friendly offerings to do here with their family. Don't just say you're family-friendly, prove you're family-friendly. And creation of the branding and the marketing tools, like I said, but as well as getting the guidelines for implementation and how to carry that through and really be successful. some of the scarier things we talked about was the estimated cost. What does something like this potentially cost? And it's not a small task, obviously. And obviously I was talking to Ogilvy, again, one of the big boys, but the estimate that they gave me was between 300 and 500,000. And the timeline for completing something like this, he said a minimum of 10 to 12 months, and that is after the procurement process is finalized. So that doesn't include coming up and choosing the agency. That is once the agency hits the ground running, give them at least 10 to 12 months to really take this as a marathon and not a sprint. You don't want them to rush through this. So how would we pay for something like that? There's obviously, I'm sure that our CFO has a lot more opinions than I'm going to offer here. But I kind of thought, you know, we have our resort tax, which has been hit, obviously, but there's the promotion side of that. Do our partners want to join us in this and help the funding of this VCA, the GMCBB, and the bids that are out there? Do they want to take part in this? All questions and ideas just to throw out there. And what are the next steps for something like this? Obviously, identify the funding, create the task force, and begin the process. That's it. Chair, I spoke fast. I was trying to get through it for you.
That's wonderful, Tanya. Thank you very much. Thank you to all our presenters. So let's bring it to the virtual dais here. We have the next period of time here, half hour, for us to ask questions or comments on activation, target industries and incentives, and branding. So let's see who my first person with their hand up is going to be. I'm going to look at my chart here. Let's see. Colleagues, who wants to be first? Okay, Commissioner Arriola. That was very interesting out of that. Commissioner Arriola came and went, and then Commissioner Richardson.
I'm here. I mean,
you're here. You go first, then, and Commissioner Richardson is next.
Go ahead.
I'll just riff. I mean, you know, our brand is impaired. There's no doubt about it. COVID didn't help. You know, we've spent the last 6 months, you know, crapping all over ourselves. So we need help really quickly. I would move to engage, you know, the very best branding firm we can find, and, you know, $500,000, $750,000. I mean, it's peanuts compared to the return we get if we do this right. You know, we've got $40 billion in real estate and hopefully growing, not shrinking. And, you know, a huge budget, a huge economic engine here. If we don't get this thing restarted, we're going to be in hard times for the next decade plus and trying to dig ourselves out of a hole. I think this is as urgent as any COVID measure we've taken. We have to invest in our brand ASAP, get the very best brands, you know, business minds and brand leaders that we can. And I think we need to do it, you know, in the next 30 days and really start a turnaround plan immediately. So, I like that we're thinking this way, but we got to take action. We can't just do the normal government thing, which is study it, and deliberate. This is as urgent as anything that we've faced in, you know, in my lifetime here. So we need to get ourselves out of this hole ASAP, and we should just hire the very best we can, engage the best business minds that we can. We've got some great talent in Miami Beach, some great CEOs and retired CEOs who can help us do this, but I would urge the mayor and all of us to do this quickly.
Thank you for your comments, Commissioner Arriola. Commissioner Richardson.
Thank you, Chair. So let's talk about the branding first. So I think you did a great job of identifying the issues, Tanya. I think the estimate you got, quite frankly, might be even a little low. It sounds like a lot of money, but Ogilvy, that if we were to get that kind of firm. So I'll back up to, like, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years ago when I was in Tallahassee and was visited, you know, then the city would come up and talk to me, and also the GMCVB. And I would look at their materials, and their tag has been for quite a while, Greater Miami and the Beaches. And You know, I've been troubled by that tagline for a long time, but it really wasn't my business until last November when I was elected locally, and now it's my business. You know, I don't think that it has served Miami Beach very well. In fact, I have jokingly, not so jokingly, said to my friends over there, I have a new slogan. It's called Miami Beach and the Mainland. And let's spend all of the money of the GMCVB and let's advertise Miami Beach and the Mainland. But this community, Miami Beach, has been spending a lot of money to promote the brand of Miami, Greater Miami and the beaches. I don't see where we get much benefit from that tagline. It seems like most of the benefit goes to my friends across the water, and I have great respect for them, but I don't want to spend my tax dollars to build their brand. I want to build our brand here. And so the conversation, we all know that we need it. I know that we've been giving a lot of money to the GMCVB, and I already said to John some months back when we were working on the budget for this particular cycle that we should have a conversation about how we want to spend that money going forward. And I know it takes time to reevaluate that. But we need serious work on our brand, our tagline, our branding. And Tanya, I think you did a great job of identifying the work ahead of us. Obviously, we've identified the work. Now we just have to go and do it. I am all in favor of spending the money to get the best talent that we can get to help us in this regard. But it's going to have to be something that's going to build the brand of Miami Beach and not our surrounding communities. So one idea.
I got to your text. I need help.
Hey, Dan. Dan, go on mute. So one idea in terms of money is, you know, we're going to get an infusion hopefully from the claim that we put in on the COVID. And so that's hopefully will be coming in. So anyway, that's on the branding. And I'm very supportive of spending the money to get this right. On the other areas, the economic and the activation, the presentations were very helpful from a micro level, but I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of the macro on those issues. And so I'll be following up with Amy and Heather to have another conversation because I think that the presentation was good at the micro level, but I think what we're talking about today is at a very macro level, and I think that we need to have that conversation before we can all that stuff at the micro level fits into the macro, but I think we really need to have a conversation about activation, economic development at the macro level. So those are my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Richardson. It was a tie, but I think Ms. Commissioner Minor got there before the mayor. So if that's okay, Mayor, Commissioner Minor next, and you're up after that.
I'm willing to defer.
It was a tie. He's okay. Commissioner Minor, you go.
Okay, thank you. And I guess I'll start off by saying when I initially saw the mayor's initiatives in this proposal, I was so thrilled because I think it's a tremendous opportunity. I think we're going to look back at a day like today, 10, 15, 20 years from now, and it's going to be an absolute game changer. So I actually agreed to co-sponsor the mayor's initiatives. And it's really an opportunity because it's a unique moment in time where our residents, the businesses, most of the businesses, stakeholders, they're demanding change and we have an opportunity to give it to them. So, and in addition to the initiative, I thought this would be a good time because I actually have had an idea for quite some time that, frankly, before I even contemplated running for public office, about how to activate the South Beach, Loomis Park, Ocean Drive, the beach area with really 365-day-a-year family activation. And I thought this would be the perfect time when I read the mayor's proposals and when this workshop was set up. So I put an item on the commission agenda. It's actually a referral to our neighborhoods committee discussing some ideas for the activation, which I'll get to in a moment. And I did what I thought was just a simple Facebook post that basically some of my ideas, and it went viral. That's the only way I could say it. I had tremendous outreach from friends, from people I never spoke with. The Miami Herald reached out to me. WIUD 610 AM radio did an interview that they're airing on this. And a cultural museum actually reached out to me as well, looking to relocate to South Beach, and said they saw my post and they're looking for new opportunities for family-friendly places for their museum. So, and it's obviously Ocean Drive always gets a lot of attention, but I think the we're capturing the attention of people, not just because it's Ocean Drive, but what potentially we can offer for them. And I think Tanya said it well when she talked about this premier marketing firm said, we can't just say we're family friendly. We actually have to be family friendly to capture the tourists and the residents. And I put out these ideas on Facebook and what have you, because I wanted to get resident input. And these ideas, although I've put in a lot of work, and I'll present in more detail at the Neighborhoods Committee, and hopefully all to the commission, that really I'm throwing these ideas out because I want to have resident input, what people want. I want commission input to hear what my colleagues think about this. And I've spoken with Jimmy, with Eric Carpenter, and they're very supportive. I'll let them speak for themselves, but in my conversations, very supportive. So just give a couple of quick highlights, because I know we're short on time, so I'll just take another minute or two. But I mentioned a Ferris wheel, a carousel, concerts, cultural events, art exhibits, good food, certainly positive activations that would transform the area, but literally every day, 365 days a year. And one of the things that struck me, and I, like I said, I've had these ideas before for a while, before I even ran for office, is so many of our residents never ever go down to Ocean Drive, to Loomis Park. You know, sometimes we obviously, as commissioners, we deal with people who know our city well, who are very active residents, which is great. I think it's one of the beauties of our city, which makes being commissioner actually such a gratifying position. Our residents are fantastic, but there are so many residents who don't even know what Loomis Park is. It's shocking. I've done sort of informal polls, just asking people. They've heard of it. They don't even know what it is or where it is. And even people who have heard of it who don't even know, have never been there. So we have an opportunity, I think, not only for a tourist standpoint, but also to make it exciting for our residents. And I've looked at different locations around the world, whether it be Geneva and Singapore, London, Santa Monica, Seattle, all have very similar types of visions, and Ferris wheel being one of them. But again, I'm not wedded to the idea. I throw it out there. And I give an example with London. They put in their Ferris wheel as a pilot program in 1999. It was only supposed to be for a couple of years, and they've kept it. It's been one of their major attractions. And that, I just use that as an example. And so maybe we could do something like that. We could try different pilot programs, and they don't have to, if they work, great. If not, we move on to other ideas as well. So I think, as Heather mentioned, the Instagram moments, we just want to have that activation from not only from an Art Deco and cultural perspective, but also from a perspective where we can bring in family-friendly activations and really change the image from the entertainment district to the Art Deco district. And I think when we can do that in combination, we help everyone. We help our residents. We bring in tourism. We'll help our businesses. It will deter crime because it'll be heavily trafficked. And these can be done in a very, very high-end way. And I think fits in with the mayor's vision and initiatives.
Thank you for those comments.
Commissioner, I can just add, to substantiate on the basis of data, and I know Tanya or Amy Knowles may have the data. You know, we do our every 2 year surveys of residents and businesses. And interestingly, one of the questions we ask, I think at least the most recent survey, was to name the top four or five places you go to frequently on Miami Beach among residents. And interestingly, the MXE was not among the top four residents. Lincoln Road was very high, but Ocean Drive and other areas. So I think that sort of substantiates, Commissioner Minor, some of what you're saying there.
Thank you.
Thank you for those comments, Mr. Manager. Mayor Gelber. Mayor?
Is that what it's like? Is that what it's like when you guys do it?
I don't know. You are muted a little, but kick back to you.
Lord. It's good to hear all these presentations about things that are happening. I think we have to leave with an action plan. And some of the items coming up, you're going to see some very specific things to do. But on the branding and things like that, I have reached out to the Visitors Convention Bureau already, the GMCVB, because they have obviously, as Commissioner Richardson pointed out, a pretty big contract, raised some of the same issues that David referenced. And so one of the things that is a real possibility, and we haven't worked it out yet, is to ask them. They have a substantial marketing budget. And they actually, the companies they use are real serious. I think VMLY and R is one of their main agencies, which is a pretty major company of advertising, branding, and relation PR. But they already have money that a lot of it comes from obviously our city. And I think, and my pitch to them was that while they can do a broad countywide effort or regional effort, there ought to be something that is just for us, in the same way that there are lots of industries that project themselves out in different ways, depending upon the different customers they're looking for. We should be able to do that also, and it might make sense. And they didn't have an initial response to it, which would make me think they're not considering it. So I think, Jimmy, we can probably continue that discussion with them to see if, in the funds they already have, which are a pretty amazing amount of funds, that whether we could take some of that, and instead of just saying, look, everybody benefits in the county when people come to the county, because most people will ultimately, visitors will stay at our hotels and will visit us. We know that. So there is a commonality to the effort, but there's no reason why we couldn't project out who we are, because that's also going to help the county. It's just a different way of appealing to people, and at the same time, defining who we are, because one of the problems is other people are defining us. I see those promoted parties and, where people are saying, come here and go wild. I just sort of think that's how we're being promoted, as a place to go wild at. And we should be doing the promotion, and we should be defining who we are, because that's going to signal to the world who ought to be coming here and what they can get when they come here and what can, and why they would want to be here. So there is a fund of money that I'm not going to commit to it because I haven't finished our discussions with them, but I think the GMCVB did not blanch when I talked about it. They do have some top Madison Avenue type firms already, and the details, but that's something we should not only pursue, but would allow us to do exactly what a lot of us want to do pretty quickly.
Thank you for those comments, Mayor. Let me say a few things. First, I want to react. I very much appreciate and look forward to continuing the dialogue on activating Loomis Park that Commissioner Minor shared. I think that we have an underutilized asset. I like that we're listening to our residents. I think we always are on our best game when we do that and take that as input. I like the idea of attracting residents as well. The exact specifics of how, I know those are just thought starters. So, that's obviously for another day. And I don't know if my colleague literally thinks about 365 or if he's talking weekends and primary events. That's for another day as well. What would really be helpful, I think, is to look at some analogies, and you mentioned, Commissioner Minor, London. I think of my days in New York City, I think of Bryant Park and outdoor cafes and people huddling around, even a chess game or two, and some art and nature. I mean, just, it'd be nice to have a picture or two of some analogies. I always think that's helpful. So I look forward to carrying on that discussion. I think the presentations we got were helpful. To the first presentation about incentives or recruitment, that's going to be a tough one. I think it's easier to say certain things we want to change rather than saying what we want and how to bring it. So that clearly is going to require some discussion. And as part of that, we need to be thoughtful about transitions. As we say things we don't want, we certainly don't want empty storefronts or empty locations. To Heather's specific question, do we want to attract, are we willing to invest you know, for the creative economy? I think broadly my answer is yes. The devil's, of course, in the details. And I do think we need a multi-year view. Let me sort of close my comments on the branding. I thought that was a very interesting perspective. Few reactions. The first is we probably need to get our heads around the specific focus. I absolutely get a branding approach. It's a familiar terrain for me of what do we look like? What do we want to be? And that's great. That has a role. We're also in the midst of what I think one of my colleagues, Commissioner Arriola, mentioned about a relaunch. So that's sort of a different angle. It's like Miami Beach is open again and come on back. That's a different angle. And then there's a third angle to sort of sort through of the ADC, the arts ADCD. I think I got my D's and C's right. ADCD, which is sort of like, also a relaunch. So I don't think we're solving that today, but I could see a focus on overall city macro branding. I could also see a bit of focus on those other elements. Other specifics to that. I believe the linkage to regional efforts is critical. You know, the branding, and Commissioner Richardson made some interesting comments about, you know, the beach and the mainland, or Miami and the greater beach, you know, how does that work? I think linkages to other folks doing things, the GMCBB, the VCA, I think is extremely important. And one other thing I would really say, because these are big, complex things, I really would want to think whatever we did had two critical elements. One, case studies and analogies of folks in similar situations. So we sort of had a picture of what this looks like, because sometimes pictures and examples from others can bring things to life so we know we're on the right track. But two, quick fixes, quick short-term action items. How do we clean up some of the branding we have? How do we quickly marshal resources? You know, I think these things can go on for a while. We certainly don't want to boil the ocean, if I may, and it needs to have a long-term view. I get that's where we're going. But what are the short-term actions? And I think any outside activity, I would want to highlight that as an important deliverable. So those are my comments at this point. Look forward to continuing the discussion. Commissioner Arriola's hand is up. Commissioner?
Yeah, I just wanted to commend my colleague, Commissioner Minor, for going out on a limb, coming up with something creative, out of the box, something that's sure to, you know, grab attention and controversy and probably subject him to, you know, all kinds of, you know, not pleasant things sometimes. Being someone who's used to being in that seat, welcome to the team. I commend you and I like the direction. You have my support, encouragement. Don't give up on it. I think family-friendly programming is part of the solution, part of our way out of this. I recall Times Square in New York, those of us who are old enough to remember what it was like in the 70s and 80s, it was literally the cesspool of Manhattan. It seemed irredeemable, full of every vice and, low life you can imagine. And in very short order, they were able to get their way out of it. They shut down the businesses that were contributing, the overwhelming police force to get rid of the bad actors. And then, and I think we're going to talk about this, they brought in investment. And I think Disney was the first big investor to, you know, put a stake in the ground there when they opened the Lion King right off of Times Square. And that's part of what I think we should also be exploring in terms of economic development. We need to be trying to bring a real major player, real major actor to invest in the area to say, look, we believe in Miami Beach and its future and this part of town, and reposition, just like the Faena District did further north. We need to try to find that catalytic investment to help us prove what we're trying to accomplish here.
Great. Thank you for those comments, Commissioner Arreola. And magic has hit us. The agenda said around 3:15, Jose Gonzalez was going to talk to us about transportation and transit. Seeing no hands, we're going to transition right to that. Jose, you're up. You have 15 minutes, please.
Can you see and hear me now?
Yes.
Both. Okay, good, good. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As part of our piece of reimagining the Art Deco Cultural District, my team focused on how people will travel to and within the district and how these movements can interface in the best way possible to create synergies, to activate the area in a positive way and promote economic development, while maintaining the essential functions of the existing businesses, as well as emergency vehicle access, which is very important. In our presentation, we wanted to encapsulate many hours of analysis and research, focusing on reimagining a cohesive network of streets and connections to neighborhoods, while respecting the character of each individual street and being mindful of the adopted mobility plans for each corridor. As you're aware, in response to the pandemic, we've worked closely with the community to deploy temporary projects such as the Washington Avenue protected bike lanes and pedestrianizing Ocean Drive as a catalyst for economic recovery. Our presentation uses both historical data as well as current conditions to generate some short-term and long-term mobility recommendations for the district. As we were analyzing the district, we established some core goals based on policies and recommendations in our transportation master plan and bicycle pedestrian master plan, which were adopted by our city commission in 2016. Seeing this through the lens of our adopted master plans ensures that our goals for the district align with the city commission's adopted modal prioritization of pedestrians first, bicycles and transit second, and private vehicles last. So in our presentation, you'll see concepts that in essence, improve walkability, create gathering places, and build connectivity to some of our other iconic destinations, such as Española Way and Lincoln Road Mall. And then, of course, bicycle and transit connectivity is essential to ultimately develop a cohesive multimodal mobility network that supports economic development. And then at the end of our presentation, you'll see a video animation that illustrates the concepts that I'm referring to, and what our long-term multimodal vision for the district could potentially look like. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Assistant Director Jose Ferrer Diaz to make a brief presentation on our mobility plan for the district.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much, Jose. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Just moving right along, as our director mentioned, one of our starting points was to take a look at the existing master plans. The transportation master plan and the bicycle pedestrian master plan to determine how some of these modes and corridors were prioritized in terms of modes. So Washington Avenue was prioritized as a transit corridor, while Collins Avenue was prioritized as a bike ped corridor, and Ocean Drive as a pedestrian priority corridor. It is worth highlighting as well that Washington Avenue is part of the county's SMART plan and is identified in that plan as a rapid transit corridor. So once we established the priorities for of the master plan for this district, it was important to take a look at the network and establish the safe multimodal links between the adjacent neighborhood and the district. We accomplished this by putting together a network of greenways or boulevards to connect the neighborhood to the district, which would increase the economic resilience of the district as well. In addition to that, we looked at the north-south avenues in the district in order to develop some high-level goals, which were prioritizing multimodal connections on Washington Avenue, improving delivery and passenger drop-off on Collins Avenue, and establishing a pedestrian and commercial boulevard on Ocean Drive by closing it to vehicular traffic. One of the more telling slides that we have is this one on Ocean Drive, and this is some of the what aided us in the high-level decisions that we had to make, particularly for the north-south avenues. And in this slide, what you can see is a comparison on how the road is designed versus how it's used. So on Ocean Drive, and this is one of the examples, and we did this for every road that we analyzed. On Ocean Drive, what you can clearly see here is that the way that the road is designed is 58% of the space in the right-of-way is dedicated towards autos, so towards cars or vehicles. While in fact, the road, the way that the road is used, 62% of all people that traverse this road are actually pedestrians. So the road design does not match the road use, and that is where we need to find a way to have those two marry. One of the important modes that we took a look at was transit. As you know, Washington Avenue is the main transit corridor within the district. However, given the recent temporary project, we have transit temporarily relocated to Collins Avenue. As you can see in the pictures here in the slide, we have some challenges with Collins Avenue being a transit corridor, given that it has limited right-of-way. As you can see in this picture, with some of the deliveries occurring from the center lane, and you have transit operating in the north-south direction, there's very little space for transit to operate safely. This could, you know, generate some safety concerns in the future. In addition to that, with the limited sidewalk space and on-street parking, Collins Avenue also doesn't have sufficient room for transit amenities such as shelters or bus space. So it's important that we took a look at this corridor to see if it could support transit on a long term, and we found that it was not a feasible corridor to support transit. So with that, we put forth some short-term and long-term recommendations for each of the corridors. And we wanted to do that because we wanted to effectuate immediate change in some of these corridors, while some of the other projects were a little bit longer term. So based on all the data from the districts and putting together these short term, we have the recommendations for Washington Avenue. And in the short term, we recommend bringing transit back immediately and exploring the implementation of transit platforms, which you can see one here in the picture. And exploring bringing the transit back with these transit platforms. And what that would allow us to do is continue with the bicycle lane as you have it now under the temporary condition. We would also create bus bays, and that would have a very minimal effect on the existing restaurant extensions and even to the same extent to the parking. In the long term, we propose redesigning the corridor by reducing the median width and creating a true multimodal corridor with transit lanes, on-street parking, bicycle lanes, as well as keeping, you know, the opportunity open for expanding the restaurants into parklets. For Ocean Drive in the short term, we recommend actually not reopening the road to vehicular traffic and keeping the restaurant expansions and the pedestrian boulevard atmosphere. We felt that that has been a very positive, that has brought very positive environment to the area, and we have received very good feedback from the community on that. In the long term, we recommend redesigning the street to a single elevation and expand the sidewalk cafe zones, and also, you know, making sure that the road is accessible to emergency vehicles. In looking at the city's future plans, we know and understand that the Geobond program offers a great opportunity to implement these changes, and advancing the funds for Ocean Drive and Washington Avenue to Tranche 2 will allow the city to expedite this implementation. For Collins Avenue in the short term, we recommend implementing freight loading zones on Collins Avenue and implementing as well a curb management program, which to our understanding, the parking department is working on RFP services for that. And in the long term, you know, as the city advances perhaps construction of garages in the area, and as we take a look at the trends for parking, we can take a look at, given the high pedestrian demand and even some bicycle demand in this corridor, we can take a look at repurposing some of this on-street parking and looking into expanding sidewalks, adding some sidewalk amenities, and perhaps even bringing in bike lanes. So for the east-west streets, in the short term, we recommend the implementation of green background shadows, which you can see a picture here on the slide from Meridian Avenue. Those have been very well received in that project, and we think that that's going to help a lot in the east-west connection for all modes of transportation. In the long term, and you know, similar to the recommendation on Collins Avenue, in the long term, as if the city can move forward with some off-street parking in throughout the district, we can take a look at repurposing some of this on-street parking and creating protected bike lanes in order to make those connections, which we think is going to enhance the safety and bring more casual riders into the district as well. With the closure of Ocean Drive, one of the items that we had to look at closely and in close coordination with the parking department was the relocation of valet parking. So in close coordination with the parking department, we recommended moving valet parking to the 100 blocks and actually to all 100 blocks between 7th Street and 11th Street and then every other 100 block north of 11th Street. So in the short term, we recommend the relocation of the existing vehicle barriers to create some space east of Ocean Court, which is the alley just west of Ocean Drive, and designating that area for valet parking only. And that would allow the valet parking to operate safely and more expeditiously. In the long term, as Ocean Drive, the plans for Ocean Drive, you know, are completed and Ocean Drive is raised to a single level, we can take a look at introducing some cul-de-sacs, as you can see here. In this diagram, you can implement some cul-de-sacs or a similar configuration to allow the valet parking to turn around more with more ease. One of the items that was quite challenging to take a look at was delivery operations. With the closure of Ocean Drive and the limited space throughout the district, our team did a real deep dive with the help of the parking department into the current delivery operations and developed a plan focused on, you know, the context and the available right-of-way. So in summary, the idea is to have the smaller vehicles, the smaller two-axle vehicles in the 100 blocks just west of Ocean Court, so between Collins Avenue and Ocean Court. And then having box trucks, smaller box trucks, two-axle vehicles on Collins Avenue on the freight loading zones created there. And then having the larger vehicles, such as the ones you see in the picture, the larger 18-wheelers or the Coca-Cola trucks or trucks that are three axles, having them move to the 200 blocks where they can easily make the right turns or the left turns and don't have to, you know, do any maneuvers or backup maneuvers, and on Washington Avenue as well. The other idea is to also limit the hours of delivery from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. and then opening up that parking for other purposes. So for instance, in the 100 blocks, one of the ideas that we had with some of this loss in parking that we have been experiencing, or that we will experience as a result of some of these closures, the 100 blocks after 11 a.m., we were thinking of, and our recommendation is to create passenger drop-off zones that's going to help with the ride share, because we see that an uptick on ride share will happen as a result of this. And with that, we're going to move forward to the video. And before we start the video, this is an effort that, you know, when we reimagined the corridor, we set out to create a vision for this district, which was multimodal. And, you know, we try to transmit this vision to you. And we created this video animation showing the results of future recommendations for Washington Avenue, the side streets. This video starts out at 15 feet up in the air, and it's essentially a walking pace through or a flyover through 10th Street. And you'll see some pauses in each of the north-south avenues. And I'll take the time to describe everything that's happening as you see it. So here we're approaching Washington Avenue. And as you can see in this video, we're promoting here narrowing the median and having actually left side bike lanes. And this is not a new concept. It's a concept that has been implemented in various areas, but it reduces conflict. We're also proposing a transit lane. And if you can see up a little bit in the distance over there, you also have a parklet. We'll also have space for on-street parking as well to alternate with those parklets. Here we're going to take a look at the south approach. And as you can see, we have the same configuration. You can see the parklet, you can see the left turn, the left side bike lane, which is going to, at the left turn lanes, become shared with the left turn lane, which is the common practice for this. But it has shown great results in other areas. There are other municipalities that have implemented this, such as San Francisco, Boston, and as close as Naples have implemented this left turn, left side bicycle lanes. So as we now fly over 10th Street, you can see here that in the 200 block, you have the delivery zones there. We wanted to show the flexibility of the space. So on the north side, you have cars, but the intent is this area will be all deliveries between 7 a.m. and 11 a.m., and then it'll be open for parking. So you see here that this is the larger style of vehicle. The other thing to highlight here is the green shadows that are going to make the bicycle connection in the short term to the district, and it's going to help make that connection and make some of these side streets more multimodal. On Collins Avenue, there's not much of a pause here. We didn't pause on Collins Avenue because there's no changes in configuration, but rather just operation of the corridor and creating some of the freight loading zones. As we approach the 100 blocks, as you can see, There's also flexibility in this corridor in having the smaller vehicle, which would incentivize perhaps some of these purveyors to use smaller vehicles to approach this area, as well as the ride share zones. And here in the street end, as you can see, there is a valet zone that we have created with the valet stand. And this area would be for exclusive use of the valets so that they can, you know, conduct their operations and conduct their turnarounds. Here, as we approach Ocean Drive, you can see that the road is raised and it's become a boulevard. This concept came, and it's a great concept that came from our planning department of putting the restaurants in the middle and creating a boulevard to either side that also allows for emergency access on either side of this of the corridor, which would enable, you know, emergency vehicles to access the corridor from all sides. So with that, that's the end of our video and the end of our presentation. And, you know, we'll be ready for any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Jose and Josiel. Love the air view there. That was very, very creative. Much appreciated. Tom Mooney now will present on zoning for 15 minutes, and then we'll bring it up to the virtual dais for a good hour discussion on transportation and zoning. Tom, you're up.
Sorry about that. Okay. My particular presentation is probably the most mundane out of the previous four, certainly not as colorful, and I don't have the really exciting videos, but it's also from a policy standpoint, probably the most significant and probably the one area where you guys have gotten the most email and correspondence traffic from. And it pertains to zoning amendments and potential zoning incentives for the area. And when myself and my staff were charged with looking at the area, we really looked at it holistically. And the zoning amendments portion can be divided into two components. As the commission is aware, and this is the first component, there was a referral on July 29th, and three items were referred. Proposed amendments to Chapter 6, proposed amendments to Chapter 46, and proposed amendments to Chapter 142. There was also a separate referral pertaining to standalone bars in the MXC, and that's included as part of the proposed amendments to Chapter 142. I'll start with the most expansive and I'm sure what has been the one particular proposal that has gotten the most attention, and that is the proposed revisions to Chapter 6. And the proposed revisions to Chapter 6 would establish a new process for alcoholic beverage establishments. One of the things that it would do is it would roll back the closing time for existing packaged liquor stores from the current 8 p.m. to 5 p.m. And that would only be for packaged stores that are legal non-conforming because as you're aware, in the MXC district, package stores are no longer a permitted use. So we don't permit new package stores, but the ones that are existing are allowed to be open until 8 p.m. We're proposing to roll back their closing time to 5 p.m. The other major change is to roll back the closing time for the sale of alcoholic beverages in all alcoholic beverage establishments in the MXC area along Ocean Drive and Collins Avenue from the current 5 a.m. to 12 midnight. But contemporaneously with that, we would be proposing that a new process be set up that would immediately allow all businesses to request an extension of those hours back to their previous closing time, if it was 2, 3, or 5 a.m. And the reason that we had proposed doing this is in order to get a better handle and better operational control over a lot of the bad operators on Ocean Drive and Collins Avenue. And the way we approached it was rather than having a hard stop of 2 a.m. or a hard stop of midnight, operating after midnight should be considered a privilege and not a right. And too often, a lot of operators take advantage of that and it's reflected in their operation. This would establish a process that would kind of level the playing field for everybody. And in order to have your hours extended past midnight, rather than giving that authority to an existing land use board like the planning board or the board of adjustment, we're proposing that a new board created called the Alcoholic Beverage and Operations Board. And the reason we suggested this is because we believe that such a board would be far more nimble and would be able to meet more regularly, not just in terms of taking action on new applications, but also in terms of regulating existing applications where there may be issues. Their role would be similar to the planning board in terms of reviewing operational aspects of a business and deciding whether or not to extend the hours. But there would only be 5 members as opposed to 7. We're proposing that the board members would be appointed by the city manager and then confirmed by the city commission. And the notice requirements and the fee requirements would not be as onerous as a regular land use board. We've, in addition to the summary of the zoning amendments, we have more details of how this board could be structured attached to the zoning amendments sub-memo that details that in Chapter 6. The next major change is to Chapter 46, and this is basically a strike through. What we're proposing to do is to strike through the current exemption of the noise exemption for those properties on Ocean Drive between 9th and 11th Street. And the reason we're proposing to do this is twofold. One, we want all the properties on Ocean Drive to be on a level playing field with regard to sound and noise. Currently, if you have properties in 1 to 2 blocks that can exceed that noise level, the properties to the immediate north and south of those blocks are going to need to compensate in some way. And then it sort of becomes a domino effect. This way, everybody's playing by the same rules. Secondly, the goal of the overarching goal of these regulations is not to put businesses out of business, but to get them to rethink their business model and basically take the party from the sidewalk in the street and place it back within the property. And by removing the noise exemption, we believe that that's going to facilitate a more uniform area of behavior. And when you couple that with the proposals on pedestrianizing Ocean Drive and creating the seating zones in the middle of the street, it will create a much better active pedestrian environment, as well as allow for a much better transition into Loomis Park. Lastly, with regard to the first part of this, the proposed revisions of Chapter 142 in the MXC regulations, most of the changes that we proposed are cleanup and are not what we would call significant or substantial. There are 2 changes, though, that are substantive. One is a proposed prohibition of future standalone bars and drinking uses. Ironically, when we did our research, we only found that there were 2 standalone bars in the entire MXC area. So most of the area is actually already licensed as restaurants serving alcohol or restaurants serving alcohol with entertainment. But this would prohibit future standalone bars and drinking establishments from operating. Anybody who is existing would be grandfathered. The second component or proposal would be that for rooftop uses, for commercial uses on rooftops, this wouldn't be for hotels that have rooftops for their guests, like a pool deck with room service, but rather this would be for the commercial use of a rooftop. We're recommending that that be for restaurants only, that it not be for a standalone nightclub or a standalone drinking establishment. In addition to those 3 sections of the code where modifications are proposed and are very specific and attached, we also looked holistically at medium and long-term zoning amendments and medium and long-term zoning incentives. Some of the zoning amendments that we think would be worthwhile are the following. As everybody is aware, on Ocean Drive, rooftop additions are not permitted. And in our initial FAR evaluations, there's not much FAR available to do a rooftop addition anyway. So we're not proposing that particular restriction be changed. But on Collins Avenue, currently under the code, you're only allowed to do a 1-story rooftop addition. And what we found is that people have gone ahead and done more demolition than they wanted to in order to get a slightly taller addition. And so what we're suggesting is that we study the possibility of doing multi-story additions on Collins Avenue. The reason we think that would work is because on Collins Avenue, you don't have the same line of sight issues that you do on Ocean Drive. On Ocean Drive, basically, you can see the whole building from Loomis Park and from the ocean. Collins Avenue is a lot different because the street's a lot more narrow, so the line of sight is not going to be as expansive. Moreover, we think that this could encourage connections to properties across the alley on Ocean Drive, allowing for drop-off, pick-up, delivery to occur on Collins Avenue and taking a lot of that pressure off of Ocean Drive. And so multi-story additions on Collins Avenue is something that we think would be worthwhile because we don't believe it would have a significant impact on the overall scale and context when viewed either from Ocean Drive or when viewed from Collins Avenue. This would require a code amendment. It is legislative, and because it deals with height, it doesn't require voter approval. The next change is parking. We're recommending that the parking requirements in this area be eliminated. Currently, there's only a parking requirement for new construction. And so if somebody's doing an addition, a significant addition, they have a parking requirement. However, in virtually all of the lots in this area, there is just simply no place to put parking on the property. So what people end up doing is they have to pay an onerous impact fee of $40,000 per space. Oftentimes that's cost prohibitive for good additions or boutique type additions to hotels. And from what we've seen, the only entities that have been willing to write those checks in the past in this area are CVS and Walgreens. And so there's actually a separate item pending at the land use committee now. We're not sure which direction that's going to head in, but this is something that would have, we believe, both in the medium and in the long term, a significant impact on the ability of people to do good hotel additions and invest in their properties in the area. We're also suggesting that a procedure be developed to streamline the alley connectivity across Ocean Court. We've seen this done very successfully at the Betsy. The Essex has proposed this with the Clevelander, and the Tides has proposed this. And we believe that this is an excellent way of, again, taking the pressure off of deliveries and drop off on Ocean Drive and allowing that to be accommodated on Collins Avenue. We're also suggesting that artisanal retail, experimental retail, and similar type uses be considered for introduction. This is also legislative. And finally, in terms of the long term, that FAR incentives be considered for back of house and operational needs. This is most specific on Ocean Drive because currently a lot of these buildings have to use an enormous amount of their first level in order to accommodate back of house and operational needs. If they could get some FAR relief and better utilize that space for things like art and culture, and other uses that would be beneficial to a hotel development, we think that would contribute to the long-term investment. We believe that this would be a nominal FAR increase. It would require voter approval, so that's why this is more of a long-term zoning amendment. But if there is traction for this, this is something that we think would be worthwhile moving forward. Lastly, the medium and long-term zoning incentives. These would include things like expedited permitting and reduced fees for defined properties and or uses. This would be meant to facilitate the type of investment we're looking for, either within contributing properties or for certain types of hotel uses. And then finally, we believe that a TIF district to drive operational improvements in the district would be highly worthwhile because one of the things that the area is lacking is continuous 24-hour management. For basic things like trash pickup, maintaining alleys, maintaining the right-of-way. We've done this on Lincoln Road and it's been very successful. And we think something like this could have a significant positive impact on Ocean Drive, not just for tourists on a long-term basis, but also for residents. I've gone through it rather quickly. There was a lot to cover in 15 minutes. And I'm here to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you again to our transportation team. That is a nice amount to digest in 15 minutes. Bits of good news. First, I believe I see Commissioner Gongora now on our list. Welcome, Commissioner Gongora. Second, we're back at the virtual dais for 1 hour of comments on what we just heard on transportation and zoning. First up was Commissioner Areola, and then Commissioner Gongora next. Ricky?
Yeah, so a couple things. One, I want to commend staff for doing a really nice job. You know, our transportation department, I think, did a really nice job envisioning, you know, a repurposed Ocean Drive. I actually share that vision. I've had that vision for a really long time. And I strongly support that direction, you know, obviously there may be some tweaks to it, but I happen to think that that is a really beautiful design, you know, having street ends where you can have drop-offs, open air, pedestrian, dining and walking. It makes it safe. It makes it beautiful. And I think we can figure out solutions to accommodate the concerns of the hotels. I mean, I can imagine, you know, some really beautiful trolleys, you know, electric trolleys or golf carts moving up and down so passengers don't have to worry about weather or moving luggage. These things can be solved, but I really like that a lot. Tom, I like what you proposed in terms of coming up with zoning ideas to help improve the area, including things like potential increases in FAR, in density, height. You know, everything should be on the table to try to really make this a world-class district. So I think everything should be on the table. The one thing that I am very reluctant to support is the creation of yet another board, the Alcohol Control Board. It troubles me. I think, you know, there's hopefully better ways to do that. I do like the idea of, you know, alcohol sales and nightclubs, bars. It's a privilege, not a right. And I think we should have better controls over allowing somebody, you know, who can sign a lease and fill out a BTR application to have, as of right, a 5 a.m. liquor license. But I don't want to make it so onerous and painful that bars and clubs don't open in the district. And I don't think that an alcohol control board is the mechanism for that. But I do like the idea of the city taking an inventory of all of the establishments that can stay open till 5 a.m. and support the ones that can do it right, but not support the ones that that abuse it and contribute to the decline of the neighborhood. And my final statement is I don't want us to get solely focused on bars, clubs, and alcohol sales as the main driver of the bad behavior that we're seeing, because I think that will maybe lead us on the wrong path. It's certainly a contributing factor. But the fact is, over the last 6 months, bars and clubs have been closed, and we've had curfews, yet we still see behavior that is not consistent with the Miami Beach brand. So therefore, there's a loose correlation, if any correlation, between, you know, bars and clubs and behavior. We haven't had bars and clubs open at all for 6 months, and we've had strict curfews, and we've prohibited liquor stores from selling past 8 p.m., yet we still see behavior that most of us don't want to see. So I don't want us just to simply, you know, hang the bad behavior on bars and clubs and alcohol sales, because I think it's more than that. And I think we need to look at the entire district and focus on better investment, better business establishments, more policing, more modeling of the behavior we want to see, programming, and tackle this also through design, through street design, building design. And I think we'll get there if we look at it with a lot of pieces to this puzzle and not merely just chalk it up to, hey, close the bars and clubs and this problem will go away. That won't be the solution. That's it. Thank you, Chair.
Mark, you're muted.
It's frozen.
I'm actually the vice chair of land use. Can I call on my cell phone commissioner? Samuelin gets his volume back on.
He's frozen.
All right. I'm going to take control until he's back on for a minute. I had something to say, Mayor. I don't know if you want to speak before or after me. I saw you raised your hand after.
You can go. Okay.
Okay, thank you all. Happy to be back with you at this meeting today. I apologize because I had to miss the earlier part for a treatment. So I missed a part that I zoomed in during the branding item to give you an idea where. So I missed all of the safety and security items. So I will look forward to going back and listening to those because I do agree with a lot, almost everything I heard Commissioner Areola say. I do think that there is an issue on our public streets that we're never going to gain control of without adding some more strict safety and security measures of our own. As Commissioner Areola said, and I was about to say, things have been closed. The standalone bars and clubs have been closed. Restaurants were closed, then they were open, then they were partially reclosed, then they were reopened. But they haven't been at full capacity, yet we've still had the problem controlling the city streets. So I do think that we're going to have to really look into some very stringent safety and security measures if we're going to get control over our own property. And I don't think that we can shift all of the blame on that to the private property owners. With the items that I did hear, the traffic and transportation plan, I think that it looks very exciting. I think this is an important time to reinvent Ocean Drive. We need to keep the wonderful elements that have made Ocean Drive so fabulous for so many years. I mean, we have had an amazing run. We've had wonderful venues during the 90s and 2000s. It was great. And for whatever reason, there's not as many events right now that are drawing locals back. And we need to see what we can do to make that better. And we do have some bad operators, but I don't think that all the operators are bad. So we have to find some way to differentiate between legacy, whatever you want to call them, historic businesses that have been there, and the ones that are the problems that we see coming before the special master all the time and getting complaints from unit owners. So that is a problem. A couple of other points I guess I wanted to make right away. Okay, the zoning, that is a huge element of this, and we kind of skimmed over it in a 15-minute presentation, which is, that's going to take a lot of time to get through. And I also feel bad because I see 131 attendees are listening to this and have called into this with the expectation that they will be included in the conversation. And they do need to be included. Everybody needs to have a voice at this table, whether it's the residents, whether it's the business owners. We need to work on something that works. With the specific zoning amendments that were submitted, I have concerns. I have a concern about the midnight hour. I've never lived in a town that closed that early. I think when I went to high school in St. Petersburg, Florida, in the 1980s, we closed at 1. But that's, and then we'd all go to Tampa because Tampa was open later. Midnight for a historic block like Ocean Drive is very problematic for me. So I think that hour might be a starting point, but that might not be the ending point. And while I know a lot of people pay a lot of money to get what they want voted on at elections, this issue did go not too long ago to the voters when there was to consider a rollback from 5-2, I think it was, and they rejected that. The issue of saying, well, we're going to close at midnight, but then we're going to rely on an alcohol control board is incredibly troubling. Like privatization of parking, if you Google alcohol control boards, you will see that they are problematic all over the place. There are tons of fraud and accusations of payola and things that I don't think we want to introduce and bring to Miami Beach. So I don't think an alcohol control board is a good idea. And I think if you really look into it further, you won't either. Next, the Alcohol Control Board proposed was for the city manager to choose those people. I would not be in favor of that. I would keep an open mind to a board, although my inclination is no. I would not be open to non-elected people selecting those members. The public puts their faith and their vote behind the seven of us, and I don't think that we can mask ourselves away from that and delegate important responsibilities. So I would not support that element of the Alcohol Control Board either. With all that said, I do think this is a great conversation. I do love the idea of reinventing Ocean Drive for the future. If we do change the name, I mentioned it during the referral, but I want to make sure that we call it something that reflects the Art Deco historical nature of the district. Because in my view, and several of us have been here that long, certainly the mayor and Mickey for sure, Ricky maybe, Ricky, yes. Things happened in the late 80s and early 90s. Miami Beach didn't happen solely by planning or solely by accident. It was the best of both worlds. We had the good fortune of Miami Vice putting us on the map. We had Barbara Caputman and the Miami Design Preservation League working to preserve those buildings. We had business owners that had the foresight to open up the Palace and Mangoes and other businesses that attracted a crowd. We were lucky that the fashion industry fell in love with our beaches and the fact that we didn't charge permit fees then. You could just run and shoot Cindy Crawford and Linda Evangelista on the beach for free and stay in our inexpensive hotels. And then they wanted to visit here and party here and be part of this vibrant scene and be at the gyms and the clubs. And it was a magical renaissance for people of my generation that many wish we could get back, but we can't. But we need to figure out what the next step is. And in my view, more policing and security, or a better policing and security plan, is key. Second, yes, changes to the road have to happen. We can't have that parking lane. We can't have two lanes of traffic. I had always thought we would leave one lane open, but I'm open to whatever people recommend. I've kept a completely open mind about the road, other than I want it to be closed somehow and made beautiful. But we really need to think about how we can keep the legacy businesses going, close the bad operators, and narrowly craft legislation to do that, and do something to really bring in some exciting new blood and cultural groups and historic groups to the city. And I think some of the measures in the land use area are not specifically geared to do that. And we're going to have another meeting so that those 129 people sitting around waiting to talk to that can share their views, and we can work together in crafting them.
Thank you, Commissioner Gongora. Can you hear me? You can.
Yes, I think okay. The mayor was next. I'm done for now.
Thank you for your comments. I apologize. The internet was a little misbehaving. So I think I heard Mayor Gelber. I heard your comments. Mayor Gelber's next. Then I see Commissioner Richardson's hand. Mayor? Mayor Gelber?
I'm not as good at doing this part of it as I, the last few presentations were really interesting. I've seen the PowerPoints before, and when I saw them in preparation for this meeting, I thought they would really inspire not just debate, but also more importantly, sort of imagination. And I think they have been, so I appreciate all of them. And they're really, some ways, the ones that show what this place could look like physically and the change that we'll have. But I want to address a couple of things. First of all, Commissioner Gore, you're correct that we should have people talking. I said at the beginning, I know you couldn't be here, that the participation will happen. All of these are going to committee meetings. So there's going to be multiple committee meetings and commission meetings. But I think if we had public comment on each one of these ideas, I don't think we'd ever end up seeing, we wouldn't get to the second presentation, frankly. So we're going to have plenty of time to talk these things over, and I expect it. I want to talk about the liquor for a second, because I think that's become the hardest flashpoint. And I want to clarify my view, because I think it's not exactly what people are saying. I'm not saying stop liquor sales at midnight. I'm saying change the way in which we allow people to open up past midnight. Because right now the problem is when you say we've got to get, when people say, let's get the bad operators, I've heard that since I've been mayor, and I've heard it before I was mayor almost daily from people, and we haven't been able to get rid of the bad operators. You go down a lot of these places and look at Yelp scores, they're one-star places. There are some great places there. But the problem is when you have great places surrounded by places with one star, you're in a race to the bottom, and there's no floor. And we need to create a floor, and we need to create a mechanism by which we can control operators so that good ones have nothing to worry about and bad ones don't survive in the city. If there's one thing that's clear about the current system, bad operators survive in the city. We are unable to stop them under the current system. Nobody can argue with that, because the only thing that has affected the operators that you might not have liked here is this pandemic, unfortunately, which affected everybody. But at the end of the day, we have to have a better system for controlling our bad operators. So this idea is simply the following. Rather than let everybody go till 5 a.m., and there's dozens and dozens or more than that, I have a list, it's just an enormous amount, where you can't control everybody. Give everybody that privilege with extremely exacting requirements, so that if you want to stay open past midnight, let's say you're a restaurant, I could see us creating a system where we say, everybody, you start at midnight, everybody. Some places are going to say, you know, we don't want to stay up all night, but we have a late dinner crowd. We want to stay up till 1. And all of a sudden, we have a ticket for that kind of opening. Some people may say, well, we have a little bit later bar. We might want 2 or 3. We have exacting requirements for that. And all of these are conditional uses, or even with exacting requirements. And then if somebody wants to open up a club later, we'll have even higher exacting requirements for that. I lived in an Ocean Drive in the 90s. There were clearly clubs at that point. There were clubs at that point that stayed open all night. I didn't know where any of them were. Nobody invited me to go to any of them. I just was that kind of guy. Nobody wanted a federal prosecutor at their club at night, but I know they were there, and it was just fine because they were clubs that were pretty high end and things were going on. Now we have establishments that on a regular basis, promote parties for thousands of people, where the promotion is, we're gonna just let it all go crazy, guys. And then a place with a capacity for 500 is filled up, and there's thousands of people wandering around our streets with nowhere to go because they were coming to this party. That place should be shut down the next day. It just shouldn't exist in the city. And I think anyone who says we need to get rid of the bad operators, yeah, I agree. We just haven't done that yet. So we need a new approach. And I don't care what that approach is. But if all we're going to do is say, well, every business that's been here for a while, we're going to let you continue. We're not going to apply to you. I want them to trust us. I want them to trust the fact that we'll create what we're going to break it down and build it up. We're going to break it down and say, everybody starts at midnight. If you do the following 4 things, you stay open to 1. You do the following 4 things, you can stay open to 3. And if you want to stay open all night, here's what you must do. And then we get to control it, because they're all conditional uses with exacting requirements. And then we get to control other things. And I don't want to say it publicly, but maybe we get rid of the big drinks on Ocean Drive. Oh my God, I said it. Okay, you know, maybe we do things to elevate the experience a little bit. Because what's happened is that the entertainment district has lost a cultural side to it and just been a little bit different than that. And honestly, there are some, I mean, I go to some of these operators who are amazing, and I wonder how they're doing it when they're near an operator who's not. And some of them talk to me, and I've talked to you, and said, the guy next to me just does these things I can't deal with, so I have to do them. That's why hawking happens. That's why menus that are, you know, that are deceitful happen. So we've got to find a new system. So my approach isn't to say we're shutting down at midnight. You know, my approach is to say everybody starts at midnight, and anyone goes above it has to comply with this. And I don't care if it's a board. I don't care if it's a group of people that work for the city. But I know this, and that is the current system hasn't stopped any of it and only allowed it to snowball. And that is not something we can continue. So if you want to do the same thing over and over again, don't change it. And you'll have it. I don't think liquor is the problem, but I think we sort of send a message out when we have, we don't have enough better establishments. And I remember in the 90s, and I know Michael was wistfully remembering that time a moment ago. He's right. I lived next to the News Cafe on Ocean Drive. I drove a 66 Mustang convertible, which I sold to buy my wife her wedding ring, her engagement ring. And it was the restaurants were across the board were of a higher quality. We still have some of them there, but we don't have enough of them and we need more of them. And I just think that's it. If you go look at Yelp across the entertainment district, there are some great places. And there are some that, Yelp doesn't go below one star, okay? We have one-star restaurants there, and almost all of the things that people talk about are getting ripped off or getting ripped off on their drinks or things like that. That just shouldn't happen in the city. And I don't know how it continues to happen. We've tried to stop it. So what I'm imploring you to do is say, change the system so that our enforcement is easy and that everybody knows the rules, because I do believe this. If we raise the floor, that will be where everybody goes to. If we have no floor, we're getting what we deserve. And we've got to change that. And I'm convinced of it, and I'd love your ideas and help. I think many of you have been thinking about this longer than I have and have probably a better ability to deal with it. So that's it. Sorry to speak so long.
No, thank you for your comments, Mayor. I believe Commissioner Richardson is next, then Commissioner Minor.
Thank you, Chair. I will add to some of the wistful remembrances of my younger days. I won't say my young days, I'll just say younger days in case anyone's keeping score on my age. But, Michael, you really summed up some history quite well about what happened in this very magical place. A lot of it was planned, and some of it was quite by accident. And there's one important piece of history that I want to add that I saw as I started coming down first on vacation in 1990 was maybe my first vacation down, and very quickly decided I needed to live here. Another element that played into this was part of not the plan, but the accident. Is the truth is that HIV infection rate was sky high then. And a lot of people that had in the gay community that were infected found South Beach and realized, because it had not been fully developed and explored and had been ignored for years, realized that it was a very economical place to live. And the truth is that a lot of people who had AIDS came here with the idea that they would come here and they would live out their life in this glorious, wonderful, magical place. And so I want to say that the truth is the gay community added tremendously to the arts and the culture of the revitalization of South Beach. And it was truly a magical time. And as a younger man, I enjoyed it tremendously. And I'm not embarrassed to say that I frequented some of the clubs on Ocean Drive and the Palace and Twist in my younger days. And it was really an amazing, amazing place. So the reason I think that's so important is that, you know, cities go through cycles of ups and downs. And we saw in the Gleason years, the city was on top of its game. And then the city and Lincoln Road, for example, fell into a bit of disrepair. And these things are normal cycles in communities. But what we're trying to do is to avoid a normal cycle. So, you know, we've come off of an amazing run in South Beach in particular. And what we're trying to do is to put our collective minds together and figure out how we can continue this amazing run through a revitalization, through a rebirth, through a renewal with some changes. And that's really what we're trying to do, because if we don't, I think we all recognize we have problems. There are issues. Now, what's causing the issues? Part of it is that everybody wants to be in this glorious place that we call paradise. I think Ricky said it well, and some others said it. The problem is not focused on the bars and the clubs, because they've all been closed for the last 6 months due to COVID. And we've had all these problems with Ocean Drive and with the entertainment district. So I'm not at all convinced that the problem is with the operators there. There are some bad operators for sure, but the problem is that we've got an amazing place here and people want to come here. And sometimes our visitors come here and they don't understand that they've got to follow the rules. And of course, everybody's welcome, but you're only welcome here if you're willing to follow the rules. So I don't want to just point the finger. And that's one reason why I'm triggered a little bit by the discussion on alcohol sales, is because it points to operators. And I don't think that's really where the problem is. I will say that I was really encouraged by the comments that the chief made today about the increase in staffing. I think that is long overdue. I'm going to be very anxious to see what the numbers look like over the next 3-4 months, because this just started a few days ago. I really wish that we could have started it sooner, but I'm glad that we're here now. And the truth is that we may need even more security. And that's why I raised the earlier conversation about the analysis that's been done showing first 27 million and then 6 million. I don't think that's a good number. And the reason it's so important to me is because when people talk about we need more security in the area, they see that as an additional cost, but they think that we're already in the red. I happen to believe, and my gut tells me, that we are in the positive by millions and millions and millions of dollars. And I've decided today I'm going to bring an item in October to talk about this issue, and hopefully we can get it. After I made my comments, a couple of people sent me the last part of the cost study that was done previously that showed about a 6 million in the red. And it clearly says this is an incomplete study. It says we didn't consider this, we didn't consider that, we didn't consider this other thing. So I don't want to say it's a flawed study. I want to say it's an incomplete study. And the reason it's so important is because I think we have to make an investment in this area, and I'm tired of people quoting that number like we're in the hole, because I don't think we're in the hole. I think that actually that district generates millions and millions of dollars for the district. So now let me talk a little bit about transportation if I can. I have not been convinced that closing Ocean Drive to all vehicular transportation is the answer, but my mind is open. I am open-minded, and I think everything's on the table. I remember when I was a state rep, and I had a lot of conversations with the people in Cayocho about the way traffic moved through that particular area, because it was their little main street, and they didn't like the way traffic was flowing. So I was glad to hear the presentation by our transportation folks. Thank you, Jose. You guys, both of you, did a terrific job on that. I do think I thought that the reason we were hiring the consultant was to give us advice on this particular area. Maybe, Eric, can you, I know we approved that contract yesterday. Does the scope of work include talking an analysis of transportation? Because I thought it did, but I may be wrong.
Yes, you are correct.
Okay. Remember,
this is all just concepts from staff that we're hoping the consultant can build off of.
Perfect.
Or
well, I think that we ought to give that to the consultant, but not bind the consultant in that I really hope the consultant's given an opportunity to start with a fresh piece of paper and a clear mind, and let's come up with the best thing that we can get for Ocean Drive. Clearly, modes of transportation are changing. You know, people are more pedestrian. People are more on bicycles. I do worry significantly about people moving in and out of hotels, those boutique hotels. I worry about people coming out of a restaurant late at night and expecting to be able to get their Uber pickup right there or a taxi. I think all those should be considered. I'm not an expert in the field, but I hope we give our expert the license to imagine anything and everything that's possible and give us the best recommendation. I would say the only thing that's not on the table for me for Ocean Drive is changes to the iconic architecture on the facade, on the front, so that the view from Loomis Park, when we look at that beautiful iconic facade and the architecture, for me, that's off the table. I don't want to see that historic architecture change, but I'm really encouraged by the comments about looking at potential changes with FAR, with back of the house, and other things that will facilitate the modernization and utilization of facilities. So that's very encouraging. On the transportation, I think that we need to let the consultant do their work. And I really hope that we will take the time to allow that to happen. I don't want to see us rush into making a decision before the consultant's able to give us their input. The alcohol, I think, as you said, Mayor, is probably the most controversial piece of maybe the conversation we've been having. I am very troubled by the nature of an alcohol control board. I want us to continue in short order thinking about other ways that we can address some of the problems that we have, because I don't want to transfer problems that we have now to a new category of a problem by having a 5-person board that may have their own political agenda or some other agenda. And so it bothers me. I don't know any other local areas that have tried this where it's been successful, but I'm open to hearing more. But I think that we need to explore other ways to address the problem, because I don't think this is the solution, or at least I certainly haven't been convinced yet. The other thing is that, you know, I've made it very clear from the conversations that we had in February about alcohol sales that I'm a 5 a.m. kind of guy. I do think it's a privilege to operate in the city and not a right. It's a very complicated issue because so many of our alcohol sales laws are governed by the state of Florida. And so I realize this is a very complicated area, but we have an amazing team of attorneys and they will guide us through every possible avenue and possibility that we should look at. But I'm not going to be able to support a midnight closing. I want us to continue thinking about how we can manage the problem that we have. But I ran on a platform of being a 5 a.m. kind of person. And maybe it's because back in my younger years, once or twice, I might have stayed out maybe past midnight once or twice. I don't know. But, you know, let's keep thinking about how we can solve the problem. But creating an alcohol control board is just another level of bureaucracy that I don't think is going to solve our problem. And with that, I will put myself on mute, Mr. Chair, and let you continue with the rest of your meeting, and thank you for allowing me to give the input. I will say that I hope that we could have a public forum Maybe we need to have something like this where we don't talk, but we just give 125 people that have sat here patiently an opportunity to come in and speak for 3 or 4 minutes each. I know I would certainly attend that sort of forum and just hear from the public very early in the process rather than later. I know we're going to be doing that as part of the committees, but it might be good just to have a public forum. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Richardson. I'm going to acknowledge Commissioner Minor in just a second. I do want to pick up on a couple things real quick. One, anything we can do, next steps to further engage the public would be great. I'm absolutely supportive. So as we talk about next steps, I'm for that. Two, previewing my comments, you stay up later than I do, I think is my takeaway. But thank you, Commissioner Richardson. Commissioner Minor is up next.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Jose and Tom, for your presentations. I like what I saw. I'm going to focus mostly on Tom's and some of the zoning changes. I agree. I heard pretty much everyone say, but Commissioner Arriola, the mayor, talking about better control and of our streets and our South Beach. We do have good establishments there now, and we certainly want to keep them there, and they have a place in our city, and really they're an important place, but we've lost control. And I don't think anybody disputes that. I think the businesses themselves, the good operators, admit that we've lost control. Our residents know we lost control. Our tourists know we lost control, and we need to take back that control. I mean, when we have a situation where we have numerous businesses that are ripping people off, bait and switches, that we had to get to the point where we have undercover investigators going in to see where it's just, this is not a situation that is sustainable. And I guess the one silver lining is the COVID situation has sort of forced us maybe to speed up something that really would have happened eventually. And to address some of the issues, I think the best way, and I think maybe Commissioner Gongora was talking about this, about the public safety, and certainly, but really Commissioner Arriola mentioned when, after I'd given my little presentation on the activations and the family-friendly activations, Commissioner Arriola mentioned the Times Square analogy, which was funny because I was actually thinking of that. I think it's a perfect analogy because you took a situation of an area that was, and I lived in New York at the time, and it was a seedy, crime-ridden area. And literally within a short period of time, with the activation, the investment, that Disney was the first to come in, and it just flowed from there, the programming that they were able to do. And it's just an incredible, really busy area, very safe, public safety, high police presence. And that's something we really need to fill the void, because in the absence of something, something's going to fill it in. So we need to create what we want it to be. And that's the programming, the activation, the arts and culture, the family-friendly activations. And that will, and the high-end nature of that will create people coming in and the public safety and along with the police and the police visibility that Chief Clements presented, we'll all work together. Just wanted to address the I guess there's a lot of comments about the Alcohol, Beverage and Operations Board. And I guess I look at it as, and you know, this is something where a lot of ideas are thrown out and we're trying to see what the commission wants to do and what sticks. And really, I think what comes out of this is we need to have some level of control, which we don't now, because right now we have some bad operators and we just can't do anything about it. And whatever mechanism we come up with, we have to be able to control it. And certainly we don't want any boards that could be politicized and take that out of it. But we just need to have that level of ability where the city is in a more control than we are right now. I like what I heard about that Tom presented about the incentives. And that's one of the things that I spoke to Tom and Eric Carpenter, as I'm sure we all did. And that's one of the things that I heard that was really, really interesting, was that we want to incentivize high caliber hotels. Because right now, the economic drivers down in South Beach in certain areas are the restaurants and bars, and the hotels are kind of there. And really what we want to have is the high caliber hotels and the restaurants and bars that associate with those, which would probably, if they're high caliber hotels, are going to be high caliber restaurants and bars. So I think any incentives we can offer and zoning changes that we can do to get there, I am going to be, I don't want to say any, but likely I would be very supportive of that. The alley connectivity that we spoke about and the incentives. So I like what I'm hearing. I think we're in the right direction. I would just add, I am in favor of pedestrianizing certain areas. Ocean Drive, I think that fits in with what we're talking about. Also, the programming and family-friendly programming in the area. I think that all flows from there. So thank you again. This has been great.
Thank you, Commissioner Minor. I believe I've heard, I don't see any hands at this moment. So I am going to give some comments, and then I want to recognize the city attorney. Let me first talk a little bit about alcohol.
Chair, I still have, I put my hand back up just to loop back. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely. Can I go round one and then
loop two? Yeah, of course.
Would that be okay?
Yep, so please.
Let's do this, and I'm going to speak, then you're next, and then Raul. Thank you, Ricky. So let me just give my thoughts around alcohol and the situation on Ocean Drive, and then I want to comment specifically on this idea of pedestrians and the transportation side. First, my most important comments, and I think they align very closely with some of the things that Mayor Gelber said, and what Commissioner Minor just said, we need to get control. I believe that that is gonna be the governing principle. We do not have the degree of control that we need. I think we have a major problem on our hands. I believe that we're in an inflection point. I absolutely appreciate all of the sort of history of how we got here. I completely understand the role that nightlife played, and that's wonderful. But I think, like a lot of things, the COVID pandemic has accelerated trends, and we're at a real inflection point. We put a lot of resources, time, and attention to Ocean Drive. I don't know what the magic number is, but I know we're throwing a lot at it. And yes, it does generate economic benefits as well, but we are putting a lot there. What do we need to do? I do think that a lot of the things that Chief Clements put today are an important part of the equation. Enforcement, resources, bicycles, technology, all that's good. But I don't think we completely can police our way out of the problem. So I believe that we have gotten an environment where people believe anything goes. And I think the alcohol hours and the focus on nightlife, parties all night, has contributed to that problem. And the risk is not getting control of that problem. So my position is that we do need to roll back alcohol hours. I think that has got to be part of the equation. I'm not sure if midnight's the magic hour. I don't know that that's necessarily the magic point, but I do believe rolling back alcohol hours sends a message to the type of environment we're trying to create. The other thing I would say, I share some of the skepticism around an alcohol control board. I understand what we're trying to do. Right now, I would say I share that skepticism that may not be the mechanism that we need. I also want to highlight one other point about alcohol hours. I think what we've seen in our city is we're a bit of a balloon. You know, if you push in one area, it shows up in another area. So I want us to be very careful about changes in alcohol hours in one district and what impact it has in another. You know, to be real specific, if we reduce hours in the entertainment district, our new arts and culture district, does that whole environment move to someplace like Alton Road? And I'm going to make a comment that I think we need to look for some sort of consistency. And I believe at this moment that getting control of the situation is a priority before we nuance how you get to later hours, et cetera. I frankly think having a set time at this moment, till we show we can get full control of the problem, is the way to go. I like a lot of the things I heard around zoning that probably warrants a fuller discussion. With that said, let me say a couple words on the transportation. I think the answer, I think it was an excellent presentation, and I think the answer is in our transportation strategy. Put pedestrians first. I like where we're going. I think we got it right. Cars, in my mind, are part of the problem. Cars in the parking and the traffic, the noise, the cars going back and forth, they're not helping our cause. We've tested that. We've seen what's happened during this pandemic. I like very much the models that we're seeing. A couple things I would add to this. I think we see some of the pilots we've done being positively recognized. I think we need to, as Commissioner Arriola was the first to put it forward, look at our alleys. You know, if people are going to walk, maybe we could make some of them more attractive. I think that needs to be there. I'll just put one other point, not to get us down the resiliency hole, but if you move cars off, that's a good opportunity for permeable pavement, water quality helping our bay. So I think that should be part of the mix. My final comment on the pedestrian is I think we need to have connectivity. We have lots of great assets. We've got Flamingo Park, Lincoln Road, Espanola Way, but they all seem disparate. And there's not sort of an integrated path where folks get to enjoy what's there. I'm all for having our consultant look at what we're doing. But today I'm very clear, pedestrian first. I don't support the cars on Ocean Drive. And while we can get additional input, I think our transportation master plan that puts pedestrians and cyclists first has got to be the guiding principle. So those are my comments at this time. Let me recognize Commissioner Arriola.
Thank you, Chair. This is a great discussion. So I'm going to try to organize my thoughts here. You know, I said a lot about what I thought were really good ideas in terms of, you know, looking at pedestrianizing Ocean Drive, looking at land use zoning tools to, you know, create some incentives for investment. You know, all of, I think those are all on the right track. But I think, you know, trying to say, you know, a midnight cutoff and, you know, blaming all our problems on alcohol, it just leads us down the wrong path. It is one portion of the way we're going to solve this, but it's, you know, an equal portion to transportation, urban design, programming, attracting incentives. And I just think that some of us maybe overemphasize that as the problem. And I just think that the last 6 months, if anything, have proven that, you know, bars and club is not the predominant problem in the MXE district, because for 6 months they have not been open, and yet the behavior continues. I think that counterintuitive to it, the way I think some people are thinking about this, is go the opposite approach. Attract that kind of investment. Live music venues, live entertainment venues, best in class bars and nightclubs, actually bring it, in other words, bring the best of that to the MXE district. That might be the path forward. If you look just across the bay, what has happened, right? You know, I hate to say it, but Miami Beach isn't cool anymore, right? The best restaurants, the best bars, clubs have been opening in Wynwood, Little Havana, Design District, Midtown, Brickell, Downtown, just to name a few. They've gone the opposite direction of what is being proposed. They're saying, yes, we're open. We want this kind of activation. And they've been flourishing. What we've gotten is the opposite. We've gotten the bottom feeders, the worst operators, the worst nightclub owners, the worst restaurants coming to Miami Beach. What we need to do is try to embrace and incentivize the people who want to make those kinds of investments. Commissioner Richardson, when you were state legislator, I know that, you know, Little Havana was part of your district. And, you know, I think we're all old enough to remember what Little Havana was 20, 30 years ago, or even 10 years ago. I mean, it was a rundown, you know, working class neighborhood that had a lot of crime. and issues. And what helped program their way out of it were best in class nightclubs and live entertainment. And same can be said for the design district in Wynwood. So they embraced what we're trying to run away from. So I don't want us to foreclose real opportunities to help us get out of this. Imagine what Ocean Drive would be without the Palace, right? That live entertainment that we often make a boogeyman is actually what makes Ocean Drive great. It makes it safe because it brings people there that are eyes on the street. And that's never been a problem for us, right? So I think in the race to blame things on, you know, the low-hanging fruit, we end up blinding ourselves to solutions. And again, investment is, I think, one of the major ways out of this. And I think back to when I was much younger, Mayor Gelber, being much older than I am, definitely remembers this. You know, when Barbara Kaplan, you know, led her efforts to preserve the Art Deco buildings, other things were happening at that time too. Remember, the Army Corps of Engineers dredged our bay bottoms and filled in the beach, right? That was a major catalytic event to bring the Miami Beach Renaissance to fruition, right? Investment is what's going to get us out of this. The same way investment helped reposition Times Square. It's going to be a concerted effort. It's going to be making the streets safer. It's going to be making investments that we're going to want the investment community to make pay off. They have to know that if they invest, you know, tens of millions of dollars in a hotel or millions of dollars in a restaurant or nightclub, or a big retailer comes and establishes their flagship hotel there, the flagship retail store, that they're not going to have homeless people sleeping at their doorsteps or, you know, violence in the streets. So, you know, this has nothing to do with alcohol sales. This has to do with letting people know that the streets are going to be safe. If people make investments, it's going to be safe. And the city's going to do its part. One thing we don't talk about is what kind of controls or regulations can we have to things like hotel rooms. We never talk about hotel rooms. When hotel rooms start going for $80 a night and allow people to, you know, sleep, you know, four to a room, you know, you attract a certain kind of clientele. That clientele is the kind of clientele that likes to perhaps party in the street, drink in the street, drink in the hotel rooms. You know, that kind of behavior is also part of this. And I think we need to think about how do we get our hotel partners to be part of the solution and to, you know, maybe upgrade their facilities. What can we do to incentivize that or penalize it if they don't? Some good news that I think we should also focus on, just on Ocean Drive, you know, the Celine Hotel, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of dollars they've invested. They're on the verge of opening. The Tides also is another major property on the verge of opening. And then if you all have been on Washington Avenue recently, the areas between 6th and 7th have had, as well as other parts of Washington Avenue, have had a lot of investment that's about to come online, probably, hopefully in 2021. You know, what is that going to look like? Española Way, I think, you know, pre-COVID was doing fantastic because the city had made a major investment of infrastructure in that street. So again, I want us to think about investment as a way out of this, and maybe counterintuitive to the way we're headed with closing and being more restrictive, maybe opening it up to best-in-class bars and clubs, restaurants, live entertainment. That might be a better solution. So that's where my head's at. Thank you.
Commissioner Arreola, thank you very much for those comments. Colleagues, just a quick check here. We have 20 minutes left. We're going to wrap by 5. That was the plan. I'm going to recognize our city attorney who wants to share a couple thoughts just to, you know, to get the thoughts going. Any suggested next steps, actions that you want to put on the table about anything else, let us know. We're sort of winding down, and that's an open call to whoever has a thought. But now I'd like to recognize Raul to give us any comments from the city attorney's office. Raul. Raul, you with us? Okay, we'll give Raul a second here. Okay, while Raul's coming, because we do want to hear from him, we've got a few minutes. Does anyone have any specific next steps, anything either from the city administration, our sponsor, the mayor waived? So I'll consider that a hand up. So Mayor Gelber, your thoughts.
Can you hear me, Commissioner?
Oh, no. Okay, Raul and then the mayor, please. Go ahead, Raul.
I'm so sorry, Commissioner. I'll keep my comments brief. Thank you all for participating in this workshop, by the way, at least for me and for Nick as well. It's been very enlightening. And I know you're reacting to a lot of things initially, and a lot is being thrown at you. So I look forward to the discussions in the coming weeks. As always, as your city attorney, it falls upon me, and sometimes it's not the best part of my job, but it kind of falls upon me to advise my client of potential risks. And with that said, I have been working closely with Tom and, as I said, Nick Kalergis on a very limited portion of this presentation, which is actually the LDR amendments, and in particular, the rollback of the alcohol service hours, as well as the alcohol control board. Because the public is not engaging today and they will engage in the future, I also wanted to be respectful to counsel for some of the alcoholic beverage establishments that have reached out prior to today's meetings with issues that are of concern to them and therefore are of concern to me. With regard to the alcoholic beverage hours of operation, and for those of you that have your packet and read your memo, I mentioned briefly that it's probably, as Tom said, one of the more complicated, at least from a legal perspective, issues that you will be addressing here. We have been advised from alcoholic beverage establishments on Ocean Drive that are currently authorized to sell and serve alcohol until 5 a.m. pursuant to a conditional use permit, that their argument is they feel they have a vested right to continue to do so under the laws, of course, you know, in compliance with the laws. We have also researched case law that we have researched in the past. I mean, just as an aside, you know that I've been involved with this issue back since Mayor Levine was here. And most recently, we successfully defended the placement of a ballot question, which would have rolled back alcohol hours to 2 a.m. That ballot question was challenged. As far as placing it on the ballot, the city won. The ballot measure ultimately failed. But we have argued in the past that municipalities under state law have vast discretion to regulate the hours and service of alcoholic beverages under state law. The issue here becomes a little bit more complex, because ultimately, if it is the policy of the city commission to consider some type of rollback for the district, I suspect, and we have been put on notice, that there will probably be a legal challenge from some of the current alcoholic beverage establishments within the district. And that challenge will be based on whether, for example, a CUP entitles them to some sort of vested right versus the government's discretion under state law. In full transparency, I not only addressed this issue in my memo, but I also included a letter from my friend, Council Alex Tachmas, who is representing some of these property owners, with their legal position. So again, we will certainly abide by and vigorously defend whatever policy this commission determines. But I think that, you know, prior to considering legislation that has potential legal issues, it is really my job to disclose that to you earlier than later. And that's really all I wanted to say at this point. And I also really wanted to say that in respect to the members of the public that have tuned in today who will eventually be speaking, and in particular to Mr. Tachmas, who has disclosed his position ahead of time. I just wanted to convey that to the commission and hope that that will assist you in ultimately making your determination and giving us policy in this specific matter. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. City Attorney. As always, I appreciate that. Let me recognize Mayor Gelber, and I believe I saw Commissioner Richardson's hand who would come next. So Mayor Gelber, you're up first.
Good, and we're getting ready to close this thing down probably pretty soon, right?
Yes.
So, saw that thumb, David. So here's a couple of things. First of all, this is the last thing I want to talk about generally in a couple of details. So first of all, I hope that you saw from the presentations that there are a lot of bold ideas here. If just the physicality of this area has real imagination. And I get teased a lot, mostly by Areola, that I'm like the father in Footloose, and I want to stop anything that's fun. I am going to get to the scooters at some point, but I recognize that this is an amazing electric city, and that's why a lot of people live here. They like the idea that it's not any town USA. It's a town that's for our size, has one of the highest brands in the world, and everybody visits, and everybody wants to be here. And I always describe our city as a place that produces memories. That's what we manufacture. We don't have a manufacturing base. We produce memories for people. So the question really becomes, how do we, in this area, how do we get to a point where we're producing more of the memories we want to produce than the memories we don't want to produce? That's really the question, if you think about it. Because when I see people walking around enjoying our city, I feel a swell of pride. And when I see them feel like, when I hear a story about somebody getting ripped off or mugged or something like that, I feel devastated. And especially because I have such pride in the place. So if you think of all the things you've been thrown out here, they're carrots and sticks. They're carrots and sticks. Hopefully more carrots than sticks. Hopefully you see that some of these zoning ideas are to inspire a certain amount of investment, to send a message into the community that if you want to work on a hotel and make it a more operational, higher end place, we're going to work with you on that. And I think, we've talked to the beach concessionaires about trying to provide some service to the Ocean Drive Hotel so that they can have a presence on the beach. But all those things will create some level of experience. But here's the thing about our city, which is a challenge. When they built up Ocean Drive, and I lived there in the 90s when David was cavorting and Gengora and Richardson were out there cavorting and Miner was obviously asleep. and Mark had been sleeping for hours before even apparently Miner went to bed. But the point I'm making is, though, that, when Ocean Drive and the entertainment district built up into what it was, it went from zero to something pretty fantastic. And the problem is that, and by the way, I talked to one of the guys who really was the primary developer, one of the three primary developers, and he said it was a task. He said, but moving it from zero to 100 is easier than taking it from 100 and moving it to a different 100. And what he meant by that is the business models in there are pretty cemented in at some point. And it is a business model that works for some and not others. And I think we have to recognize that as much as we want to inspire investment and change the topography and change the physicality and throw the art in there and create some mixed use concepts and some imagination concepts, we still need some sticks. And when I shouldn't just talk about alcohol, I should talk about cafe tables, because we now know something. We learned something in the last couple of years. That is, when we tie a code of conduct to cafe tables and you take away cafe tables, you really hurt somebody. And I think if you don't think about the liquor or the cafe tables as limiting somebody and their ability to serve or stay out late, think of it as a governor on their on what they on how they're going to conduct themselves. If we wanted to, and the whole idea is, I don't care if it's a liquor control board. I think that we don't need that. We don't need a board. But what we do need to say to everybody is, if you want our tables and you want the privilege to stay out, to stay up late, then as a place, you have to do the following things. Because when you don't do the following things, those things are going to be pulled from you. Because nobody can disagree with the fact that we have been unable to raise the floor of services that are provided. We have not been able to raise the floor. We've had providers, and you know who they are, who refuse to go that low, who just refuse to do it. And you know who they are. They're, you know, the Betsy and places like that, and some of the newer places. And I don't want to start naming them all, but you know who they are. The Estefans. They are keeping a level of service, notwithstanding what is going on. We have to be able to control it. Now, by the way, I'm not in this business, but I have a theory and a hope. I believe that if we take the liquor, if we say to all of the places, you can use our tables and you can stay up late, but here is the rules you must comply with, and it's a conditional use. Tables are always at sufferance, and staying out late should always be. Serving alcohol late should always be a conditional use. And that's what all I'm saying is, just make it a conditional use with very, very strict requirements. And then what you're saying to everybody is, this is the new floor. You want to come here and do business, this is the floor. And you don't have to worry about the next guy hawking, because the moment he hawks, he's not serving liquor anymore past midnight, and he doesn't have cafe tables. So he has to make a decision. The reason why we're putting I want the fines to go to not just the operators, but the owners, is that all of a sudden everybody's in the same game with us. And we've got to raise the floor of this place and elevate it so it projects out into the investment community. This is what you could come to. Since we've announced this, I've gotten calls from people who said, why you want to stop me from serving late? And I say, well, you can serve late. You just have to do it. You just have to have certain components to the place, whether it's police, whether it's don't have promoted parties without giving warning and doing the things that we expect any event to do. There's a whole list of things we could do, which, by the way, some very good places will say, I love those things. I'll do them. I'll happily do them. I'll stay out late and we'll have a late night place, but it'll have all these things. I don't have to worry about the place next to me having drug dealers outside of it, because I know if they do, they're not served late and they don't have cafe tables. We have to use carrots to elevate the entire plateau and the entire horizon. So that's really what I want to do. And I just need you guys and Mickey, okay, to really buy into this, because I think we can all agree we haven't stopped it yet. I think we can agree that hasn't happened. So we can't just continually do the same thing and hope that we're going to attract some places like Wynwood has, because all we're going to have are the same thing, just with a nicer, with just a nicer drive with some artwork on it. We won't change anything. We have to let the investment community know you can have a club, but it's got to do this. You can have a restaurant, but it's got to do this. And we can create standards that really elevate the place. And I assure you of this. I love going to Wynwood. There's no water or breeze there. Okay. I really like going to Brickell, but man, when it rains, it's like a lake on Brickell. Sorry, Mayor Suarez. Okay. I mean, there are places, we're Miami Beach. We have, and that strip and that area from Collins to Washington and Ocean is unlike anything in the world. People are going to come here. All we've got to do is tell them what we expect. And I'm convinced it'll work. So I'm not negative about any of this. I want great operators. I think, in fact, most of our operators are great. I just think that when you have to pay a high rent and the guy next to you is serving huge drinks and dragging people into his restaurant and showing him food covered in plastic, that maybe you got to do the same thing too. Otherwise, you're losing business. Well, we stop that. We stop it. And we let that area know we're going to stop it. And I guarantee what will happen is restaurants that go by, not on how good their hawkers are, but how good their food is, will be what we have as the fare. And we won't have to worry about people competing with operators who are really not doing our community a whole lot of good. So it's really not about the liquor although I do think there are things that happen late at night that are bad. It's more about controlling this purview. And if those of you that are worried that the younger versions of yourself won't have a place to go, they will, because they'll just have a place that is operating a little bit better than a lot of the places now, and it'll be fine. And that's what we need to do. So I wanted to clear that up, but I appreciate all the time, Vice Mayor Samuel, and I appreciate your leadership in this, but all of you, these aren't necessarily, they're not even, you know, my ideas. They're everybody's ideas. They're the staff's ideas. So we've got to jump on this. Let's create an action plan, and let's quickly move this around, because it's very hard to hire a branding company and an advertising company. They haven't done anything to let them know who you are now and how you're reimagining yourself. We need to do this. We're going to be stuck in a little bit in COVID blues for a little bit. We should use this as an opportunity to really jump onto this and emerge as the beautiful, exciting, iconic, safe place that we know we are. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much, Mayor Gelber. We've got just about 5 minutes left. I want to recognize Commissioner Richardson. I believe I saw Commissioner Gongora's hand. So, gentlemen, a couple final comments would be great.
Sure. I'll be brief. I'll keep it to 45 minutes or so, Chair. Thank you. So let me just follow up, Mayor. I think the one thing, Mayor, that you said that I just want to double back on is, because we all have the best of intentions here, but I do want to emphasize when you say we haven't fixed it yet, I want to say again that over the last 6 months, as the bars and the clubs have been closed, we have seen the problem exacerbated. So the problem that we have, I do not believe is happening inside the club or from people coming outside the clubs. Primarily, we do have a problem with bad operators, and we need to fix that. But if you look at what's happened on the street and some of those horrible videos, it's from some of our visitors that are coming here that are going to the package store. They can afford to drink on the street and so forth. I am so encouraged to hear about the increase of police presence. I'm going to ask the administration to bring the chief back in our October meeting to give us an update, a briefing. We've just started this new staffing plan 3 or 4 days ago, so I think we're going to learn a lot more in a few months, and we need to see how the trends go. The other thing I think that we need to be careful about is I think that our community can serve so many different communities in terms of the type of tourists that we attract. And so when we talk about wanting family-friendly activities, those are incredibly important. But what I don't want to get lost is that everyone is welcome in Miami Beach, including people who may not have a family. So I think there's a place for people to come and have a good time and enjoy our entertainment and maybe even have a drink or two. And that can coexist with family-friendly activities. And so I want to be clear that everyone is welcome in Miami Beach. The one thing, because Chair, you asked us for follow-up, that I would like to see a little, this is a very complicated issue, but I think we need to have a more in-depth conversation about economic development and activation. And I realize it's so difficult because we have things all over our city. But that's one area where I think that I'd like to see, and I'll be reaching out to the administration on that. And with that, I'm going to go because I know you got to recognize one other person. Thanks, Chair.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Richardson. Commissioner Gongora.
Thank you, Chair. Excellent conversation. I think this is a great item and the start of the discussion that we must act on and come up with solutions that work. I missed some of the branding component, but similar to what Commissioner Richardson, I think, was saying, when we program things for Ocean Drive, it works. People want to be there. People want to be there during Art Basel, during the Super Bowl, during Pride, and during times that we have activated it for more interesting things than just whoever may show up. This problem, I don't know where it came from, but when I left the commission in 2013. I used to go to Ocean Drive all the time, and I still go because I still enjoy stopping by the palace and eating at a few of the restaurants that are there. Not a lot. There's not a lot of great ones, but there are some really good ones still. And we need to promote bringing back that crowd without having to worry about going there and people brazenly blowing marijuana in your face or twerking or fighting or doing tacky things. So I think if we build it, come, and we need help to be able to brand it properly and bring those people back. And the last thing I'll say, because I know that we're over time as well, the bad operators, we need to crush, we need to stop, we need to stamp out these businesses that are giving a bad reputation to our city and to the good business owners. And I would like to see as well legal and planning to think about perhaps even more narrowly tailored legislation. And my final order now, we're still operating in terms of emergency, where the city manager has been able to take unusual measures to stop things. If there are bad operators that are acting in contrast to what we want, use those emergency powers. Stop them now. Let's take advantage of the moment that we're in to protect the health, safety, and welfare during the pandemic. And let's not punish the good ones. That's it.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Gongora. I see the manager. Mr. Morales' hand is up. Jimmy, did you?
I will truly be brief. I just wanted to really thank Eric and the entire staff. It was about 6-7 weeks ago, as everyone was thinking about entering the August break, that the mayor and the commission challenged staff to, 6-7 weeks later, come back with this session today. And I want to thank them. I know they all worked hard. Eric shepherded, but everybody, the department directors, did a lot of hard work on this. And there's a lot of hard work left to be done, because this really is just step one. But I wanted to thank them for that effort. A lot of good ideas and some controversial ideas. This is sort of a matrix of ideas, and some of them may go nowhere. Some may go a long way. And there's others we haven't even thought of. And we do look forward to hearing from the 100+ people who are on the phone and many others. With their input, we've also been communicating with, the Lincoln Road bid, the ODA, and a lot of other organizations to get their input during this process, and a lot of the other stakeholders. So this is the beginning of a process, but I think it was, I'm proud of my team today. It was a good beginning to this process.
Thank you for that, Jimmy. And let me just close with also adding my thanks. Well done by the team that pulled this together, especially Eric and his job. Thank you to my colleagues. We're at the beginning of a journey. I hope we can all feel good about step one, and we look forward to next steps. So with that, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you to all.